It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. We have a great panel for you. A first-timer, Louise Matsakis from Wired, formerly of Motherboard. She's a great security expert, joins Ant Pruitt. And from Windows Central, Daniel Rubino. Lots to talk about. Build starts tomorrow. We'll give you a preview. So is Google I.O. on Tuesday. We'll talk about that. Facebook's developers conference was last week. And which of the presidential candidates has secure email? I'll give you a hint. Most do not. It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 717, recorded Sunday, May 5th, 2019. Foursquare for drunks. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Thousand Eyes. Companies that run in the cloud rely on Thousand Eyes. It's the place they go first to see, understand, and improve the digital experience of their cloud-based applications and services. Do the cloud right and improve services for your customers and employees today. Visit thousandeyes.com/twit. And by FreshBooks, the number one accounting software in the cloud for self-employed professionals and their teams. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/twit. And by LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. Just remember your master password, and LastPass remembers the rest. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more. And by Atlassian. Atlassian software powers the full spectrum of collaboration between IT teams and the rest of your organization. Visit Atlassian.com/IT to see what IT can be by giving their products a try for free. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. We have a very fine panel assembled for you this week. Dan Rubino is here. Daniel is a writer, of course, at Windows Central, executive editor. You don't even write anymore, probably.
At Windows Central. I just try to appear on TV and YouTube. But again, a lot easier.
And it looks like, Daniel, you're carefully situated next to a hotel safe. So I'm thinking you're probably already in Seattle for tomorrow's Build conference.
Yeah, I got here a day early. Beautiful weather in Seattle for once. It's like really nice here. It's 60s, 70s, and nice. It's sunny out. So it's going to be a pretty exciting week. Maybe.
Could be. Before the show, admit it. You said it's so boring.
Yeah, Build this year, I'm just not feeling it. I'm sure there'll be some interesting announcements. I mean, there are some things we know about that are interesting and exciting, but obviously Microsoft is playing a different level these days compared to where like Google and Apple are. So it's a little bit less exciting to talk about, say, Azure and advances there, even if it's super important, even if they make a ton of money.
I don't care. We're talking about Hadoop, whether you want to or not.
Yeah, right.
Data lakes are us. also with us, Ant Pruitt. He is drinking a fine Suntory whiskey this week, contributing writer to Tech Republic. And don't forget his YouTube channel, Ant Pruitt. Hello, Ant.
Hello, Mr. Laporte. How you doing?
Are you in between Clemson seasons now? You just can relax a little bit?
No, it's baseball season.
Oh, man. There's always something.
It's baseball season, and we just signed the top quarterback in the country for football.
Well, there you go. A high school prospect?
That's correct.
How do you know if a high school player is going to be good? You don't know that.
I guess in Texas,
high school football isn't really high school football, right?
There are Texas, some California.
There's some
you know,
states
you look
where,
at our, yeah, yeah. Look at our current quarterback from Georgia that won the national championship last year as a freshman. Yep. He was rated number
That's
one.
Pretty amazing
pretty
as a freshman. Wow, getting younger and younger. And a new contributor, we've seen her before on Tech News Weekly. Louise Matsakis is here. She's a staff writer at Wired. You might remember her from Motherboard. Hi, Louise.
Hey, what's up? How are you?
Your Paris Martineau was in exactly the same seat last week, so...
Okay, I want to clarify. She sits right there. I sit right here. Okay, it's actually about 1.5 feet over.
There is a difference,
yeah.
Louise covers security for Wired, which is awesome.
Yeah, I'm technically a security reporter.
And little teeny weeny phone. Show us that phone.
Yes, teeny tiny phones.
That's so cute. That's so
I know.
Cute.
It's so good.
It's so cute. It's a fake Nokia 3310, kind of a knockoff.
You can see the little Nokia logo.
Yours says Nokia. You got it in Hong Kong, so it's that's sort of counterfeity, sort of.
Yeah, I think that the U.S. Customs probably would not let you import one like this here, but you can get one that has, you know, the cheapy Chinese logo on it instead.
Yeah. I saw yours and I bought it. I saw your article about it and I bought it. It's $21.
Hell yeah. I'm trying to start a trend. Everyone watching, you should also get one.
$21. It's the size of your thumb.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to make phone calls on it and just blow people's minds. Does it have...
Yeah, feel free.
I didn't ask and I should have before I bought it. Does it have Snake on it?
No, it doesn't have Snake, I don't think. I haven't... some of them are different. So mine has a voice changer, which is pretty fun. So it's like
Hello, this is Louise calling.
Exactly. So it's like the ultimate prank call machine for sure. So maybe yours will have that. They kind of differ a little bit depending on like where you get it, I think. But the Amazon one, I think, does have the voice changing capability. So have fun with that, Leo.
And I should warn you, she calls this phone her son.
Yeah, I think
That's
it's great.
Not
he
weird
is my
at
son.
All, Louise. Not at all. There you go. As long as you don't carry him in a baby Bjorn in front of you as you walk through Brooklyn, I think you're all right.
No, but I am trying to get him a keychain. I feel like that would be nice.
Oh, yeah. You could actually have him on your keychain.
Yeah. Yeah. He has one of those little holes that you could... Remember back in the day with the flip phones or whatever where you could have like those little key charms and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He has a little slot for one of those.
Hysterical.
So I want to see if I can get one.
Oh, yeah. I see at the bottom like a little string.
That's hilarious.
Now, yeah. I should have prepared myself. It's probably, you know, USB... the old-fashioned micro USB charging, I betcha.
Yeah, it comes with a charging cord, though. It doesn't come with the brick, so you have to have like an iPhone brick to put the USB in. But
got plenty of those lying around.
Yeah, yeah, we all have a brick or two lying
around.
Glad
I did not throw out all my old USB, micro USB cables.
Yeah, exactly. Finally. No, yeah, you have a use for it now.
So, let's see. This week, we have Build. In fact, we're going to cover that tomorrow. I have to get up at 8 in the morning. Bill Gates wouldn't have done
please
that to me.
Eight.
It's a little early.
It yeah. starts at 8?
Starts at 8. Please get up before 8.
I have to get up at 6 or 7? Takes me an hour to put on my makeup and fix my face and hair. You're going to see a whole different Leo on Monday morning.
Well, Megan, could just camp out at the office
I should
there.
Just stay here. Why go home?
Yeah.
So now the... We debated this because, Daniel, you remember last year's Build keynote went for a world record 3.5 hours. So long, yep. They actually had a stretching session in the middle of it.
That's right. Which I refused to participate in. I'm not that, yeah.
Didn't they bring a yoga person out and she showed people what to do?
Yeah, that was awkward. It was a little weird. I don't know what they're doing with these keynotes. Tomorrow's going to be a little strange, too. They have three of them, technically. So there's the main one, which is Satya Nadella's vision keynote. That's what I would say is the exciting one. But
That's a
too.
Bad sign. If that's exciting one.
That's where the vision stuff comes in, right? And we'll see some of the more interesting announcements. Unless you're really, really into Scott Guthrie's Azure server stuff, which is super important. I don't want to knock it down. It's just the one I usually pass on. But yeah, it'll be an interesting morning. So
it's going to be apparently because Satya Nadella's vision thing is sometimes a little up in the clouds. They brought in Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley to explain it afterwards. They're going to do a post keynote kind of explainer. We will carry that, and then we'll do Windows Weekly shortly after that. Is it 3 or 1? I've gotten conflicting reports.
It
but anyway.
Will, as far as I know, right now it's 3 o'clock.
It's on the schedule of 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern. What is there
does
anything,
mean,
Daniel? Go ahead, Ann.
Does this mean that the developer conferences are starting to go back to being developer conferences instead of shows?
Yeah. I would actually say that started about 2 years ago. In fact, like the last big build that was really sort of like exciting was probably 2015. They gave out Xboxes to everybody that showed up. And that was back when they were really much tying things into device launches and software for those. And the conference now is much more professional, aimed at just pure developer news. And that's why it's gone from where they would get on stage. I mean, they even announced like years ago, like a Lumia phone on stage, right? And obviously they're not doing that anymore, but it's now much more focused just on software tools for the people who are paying what is a substantial amount of money to attend a developer conference and not get distracted by flashy, more consumer news, which they tend to now save for separate events. And with Google I/O right around the corner, obviously on Tuesday, whatever major news they make that would be consumer or pop culture-ish would quickly wane within 24 hours because of Google. So I think it's actually smart to keep the conference like this, but it makes it a little bit less interesting if you have been following these for a few years now.
You do have to give Satya Nadella a lot of credit, though. Microsoft joined the $1 trillion club this month.
Yeah, did you see that that Bloomberg cover with that crazy
yes.
font?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so the cover of Bloomberg this week is how he saved Microsoft, and it's this really insane like 90s font. What did you think? Do you think he's really turned around the company?
Yeah, I mean,
hands down.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God, look at that. That's hysterical.
The Renaissance. Is that
the miracle of Microsoft? It looks like a detergent box.
Yeah. Right. Like a.
The greatest.
That's like a Pepto-Bismol font.
Guys, what it is it's those like cupcakes. You know what I mean? Like it looks like a cupcake you'd get at like a gas station or something.
And because the sun is coming up over his dome, you want to go. It's very Satya's in the clouds. Yeah, that great font. It's yellow with a pink outline. The miracle of Microsoft. And then a kind of 90s, the greatest tech company of the 90s is back. That is a brilliant cover.
Yeah. I mean, perfect timing for Build.
Yeah, I love that. It is a miracle. It's a miracle. I mean, Microsoft was so dull. Their stock was flat for a decade. I mean, you could drive on it. It was so flat.
Yeah. No, they're doing really, really well. I mean, it's not the same exciting stuff on the Ballmer era, and Ballmer himself was always an entertaining person, whether in interviews, where Nadella is definitely a lot more restrained, I would say.
Yeah, but if you hold Microsoft stock, an entertaining CEO is not number one on the list of things you want.
Yeah, ask anyone who has Tesla stock, right?
Yeah, right, yeah.
So, but I mean, I think the changes he's done, I'm not super happy. You know, I wish things with like phone and everything.
Well, you
worked
out for a publication called Windows Central.
Sure. Yep.
And it's one thing Satya definitely did, and I think you commend him for it, is really when he arrived, Windows and Office were everything. They were the cash cow. They drove the company. He wisely, I think, saw that desktop operating systems were not the future, that the cloud was the future, and he pivoted that company. And thank God he did, because if Windows were still their fortune, it wouldn't be a very good story to tell.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that change probably should have happened years ago. I mean, back in 2007, they missed mobile. I mean, they were doing mobile, and they were actually at a head start in mobile. But as a company, they were focused on desktop and were completely ignoring where everything was going. The company now is positioned in a much more forward-leaning towards, you know, looking forward to the future, the next 10 years, where computing is going to be, and trying to get there ahead of everybody else. That's why it's so much focus on AI, machine learning, HoloLens, and these kind of technologies, which as consumers, we hear, and they're very esoteric words, and we're only starting now to see little bits of this stuff trickle into real-world life. But obviously, they're betting that, you know, in 10, 15 years, this is how tech is going to be. And I think they're totally right on that. So
I agree,
But it's a little bit less exciting, at least initially, but it's important stuff.
No, and you know what? People like us don't do enterprise for a reason.
Right.
It isn't the most exciting thing ever. Consumer technology, I like consumer technology, but get me stories about Azure and Hadoop and data lakes and, you know, I'm out. And which is good. It's good we have Mary Jo Foley on Windows Weekly because
she loves that stuff.
To care about that stuff, or else she's a very good actor.
Yeah,
but let me ask, is it really so? One of the reasons tech stocks have been going up is because after the tax cut, companies like Apple have been buying back stock like crazy. That's what they're doing with their repatriated money. And some say that's artificially pushing up these tech stocks. Do you think Microsoft's value, true value, has gone up by that much? Or is it a shell game a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously not a financial person per se, so but from what I understand, their valuation seems to be well within the range of being kind of conservative. I think because everybody looks at their profits in the cloud computing area, which is just known to be a growth area, there's not a ton of competition, though the competition there with Amazon and Google, I would say, is significant and obviously major players. But they seem to have a firm grasp and vision of where they're going. So it just seems like it's betting on a future business that seems to be doing well. And the company itself is very conservative, I would say, in terms of how it approaches new problems or products and makes it a little bit safer to invest in. But yeah, the stock buyback thing is always an interesting angle. These companies are sitting on a ton of money these days. And so we're entering a new era of this like massive hypercapitalism with some of these companies hitting over $1 trillion, you know, making $30 billion in revenue per quarter. It's kind of amazing. New level.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. So
yeah. Well, I mean, if you thought that the margins were nice on advertising, the margins are crazy on cloud computing. And I think that's a big thing, is that they're just making, you know, there's not a lot that they have to really do to make a lot of money on that. And I think Microsoft's also done an amazing job staying out of the companies like Facebook, Amazon, Google have gotten themselves into, except for like the GitHub acquisition, which was like a little bit of drama. Like they really, you know, stay pretty well outside of a lot of the issues that plague a lot of these other companies. Like they want facial recognition to be regulated, you know, that sort of thing. I think Brad's really great.
Brad's
So we're just joking about that before, how like Microsoft doesn't have this, and we'll talk about it. It's in your show notes for YouTube regarding like some of their changes that are coming up. Like YouTube now has this problem of like, we help contribute evidently to the outbreak of measles coming back. Like that's a terrible headline and news story to be associated with as Google and YouTube, that Microsoft thankfully to this point has not had a story like that. They could at any moment, right? That's the business we're in. So we can't put them too high on a pedestal. But so far, yeah, I mean, absolutely right. That the last few years, it's been Facebook and Google taking the brunt of all this privacy stuff. And, you know, it's worked in Microsoft's favor.
But that's what's interesting, because if you asked somebody a couple of years ago, is Microsoft a privacy-focused company, they would say, hell no. Look at Windows 10 and all the telemetry it sends back that you can't turn off. But somehow, without doing much, it seems, Microsoft has started to look more like, I guess, in the comparison to Facebook and Google, a privacy-focused company.
They're closer to Apple, right?
They haven't taken the flag of privacy and planted it and said, this is us, or have they?
Yeah. They have a little bit, but they're definitely in between, I would say, Apple and Google in terms of privacy. They're not quite as, you know, good as I would say Apple, but they're also different business models too. But obviously Google, I was just, and we'll talk about the numbers later of Google, but like I was blown away that they made $36 billion in revenue and $30 billion of that was advertising. Like if you ever need to know what Google's business is, like that's a pretty clear sign versus what Microsoft's business is. And
Microsoft does do Bing is an advertising company, and they acquired Overture, right, which they wrote off as a flop. But they wanted, this is almost just luck for Amazon, for Apple and Microsoft. Both had ads. They were both pursuing ad tech, and in both cases it failed. And oh, hallelujah, we don't care anymore. That was a good thing, right?
Yeah, it's a tough business. Obviously, Google was sweeping up everybody, but yeah, their numbers this quarter obviously weren't great. I still also find that funny too. Their numbers, they had a 17% improvement for advertising, and evidently that's not good enough for Wall Street. It's like, because it used to be like 22%, so clearly there's a problem. But I get it. There's a slowdown in advertising, and when that much of your business is advertising, it's investors take notice.
Yeah, I love this is Kieran McCarthy writing in the Register. Of course, you know they're the kings of snark, but I love his choice of clip art. Microsoft promises to boil down its lengthy and confusing privacy controls in a 1,500-word announcement.
And then, it was 1,350 words.
Okay, all right.
It rounded up. 1,360.
Yeah, 1,360. So, what is Microsoft's commitment to privacy? Are they genuinely about that? I mean, they do. It often seems like the stuff they send back from Windows is just telemetry, giving them information about what people are doing with Windows, not so much trying to track you.
Yeah, the difference is, so there's information, right? And that's all we're talking about here is the information. What are they doing with that information? Are they then selling it to third parties? Are they themselves monetizing it? They're not 100% not doing that, right? So if you look at Outlook, Outlook serves up ads if you're not a paying subscriber to Office. And of course, Bing and Search has, you know, serviced ads for search results. So there are some elements there. But when it comes to Windows 10 collecting telemetry, it's not tied to it, not tied to your account in an identifiable way that can be used to track your behavior. It is purely meant on a technical basis for them to help improve the product versus profile you and then use that profile to then sell off to advertisers, which many would, I would say, argue that Google and Facebook do, to look at you as the sort of the target. And so Microsoft has always been doing that middle ground, like I said, between Apple and Google, and finding the space between advertising and privacy. But as of late, you know, Louise mentioned this earlier about facial scans and that kind of data. They're pushing that to be regulated by governments. This idea of biometrics having regulation, I think, is an interesting one, an important one, because so many things now scan our faces and data points. It's like, all right, where does that information get stored? You know, JetBlue recently in Boston, where I am, started facial scans instead of boarding passes.
Well, that shocked people when they did that, didn't it?
Yeah, because then it was like, wait, where are they getting the information from? Right. And it turns out, oh, they already have a database, and it's the government has it, and they're working with the government on this. And it was just, it got a little, like, weird.
No one signed off on that, you know?
Right.
Right, and they were so like, you can opt out, you can opt out. And we were right. Like, yeah, but we want to opt in. Like, that's not how this should be.
It came out of a tweet, as I remember. Somebody tweeted, this was weird. I just boarded a JetBlue plane, and I didn't have to show my ID. They knew who I was from my face. And it turns out it's a DHS database. And that JetBlue doesn't get access to it.
And JetBlue was like, oh, don't worry, Karen, you can opt out. It was like, what? But yeah, I mean, I think there's a big difference between, say, Amazon, who releases these like horrible blog posts where they're like, oh, we think that like facial recognition's fine. Like, here's our really weird like 1500 word statement on it, versus the president of Microsoft, you know, giving a speech in Paris about the importance of data and writing op-eds about how facial recognition should be regulated, I think is like a really stark contrast. So they've done a good job, at least from a public relations standpoint, of trying to position themselves as a leader.
Yeah, that's where I get squirrely, because do they do a good job of being a leader, or just a good job of public relations?
I think it's a little bit of both. Obviously, they're facing a little more scrutiny right now in Europe due to the heavier regulation there with telemetry and data collection and being upfront about it. And it does force them to be, reconsider. And that's what sort of this letter was in response to, about how they're going to respond to that and be a little bit more clear. I find their privacy controls to be pretty good. You can just go through their website and turn everything on and off. And everybody's kind of doing this now. But yeah, they've just never been as sort of creepy about their technology, which is funny, too, because if you think about it, years ago, they launched the Xbox One and it had the Kinect camera, and everybody was freaking out. They're like, I don't want to put a camera with microphones in my living room. Are you nuts? And now today you have Amazon.
Just buy a TV. Yeah, you don't have to do it. It'll do it for you.
And it goes to show you, there's that Overton window, right? How things have just shifted over. Yeah. Now we're putting cameras in our bedroom and hoping that Amazon's only occasionally recording and saving the audio that Amazon employees may or may not be listening to, which is like so different. And meanwhile, Microsoft's like, no more Kinect. So it's like, I don't know, everything's shifting around. It's very strange times. I think we're definitely trying to balance between, there are definitely people who really care about privacy and they, you know, make it a point to buy products that have it. And then there's just a lot of people who just don't care, right? Well, I'm still amazed by the Facebook, you know, how many people haven't given Facebook.
Yeah, they don't care. But Louise, you cover security. Maybe Microsoft's problem is not going to be privacy so much as security. We just heard another problem with 1903, which is the version that they're about to push out. They are pushing out in some cases. It seems like Microsoft can't seem to write software, or at least they can't update Windows twice a year as they've promised to, without all sorts of issues. And now it was 1803, then it was 1809, now it's 1903. All have had big problems.
Yeah, the amount of issues in Microsoft is crazy. Like, there's just constantly like way more bugs than there should be, and they can't seem to get their act together on that. And it's just routine at this point. Like, it's not even that interesting when these bugs come up because they are so frequent. I think if you're really concerned, you know, from a privacy standpoint, you probably shouldn't be using Word, or like, there are just certain programs that I don't think are great. But yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, all software has these kinds of issues, but it is interesting that, you know, Windows continues to stumble with these problems over and over again.
Yeah.
I continue to hear so much beef about Windows 10. And personally, I can't say that I have those issues, because about 90% of the time, I'm staring at an app, not necessarily staring at the
OS.
You're
living in Adobe world.
Or either Adobe or a terminal, or it's
a terminal.
I don't see the OS getting in the way.
Are you using Mac or using Windows?
No. I use Windows, but when I'm not doing creative stuff, I'm staring at some old Informix databases.
Jeez Louise. I'm so sorry.
Hey, my God.
I'm really, really, really. You know, I handled all of this issue by wiping. I bought a new ThinkPad X1 Extreme. Love it. But I finally just wiped Windows off and put Linux on it. That really is the only real way to use a computer. Honestly, I've struggled with Windows. And the only thing is, I don't have the Adobe universe, but I'm actually quite impressed by the range of desktop software for Linux, even for photo editing. In fact, in some ways, it's more powerful.
It is pretty competitive on the Linux side.
Yeah, I'm using a poorly named but very good program called Raw Therapy with two E's.
Leo, what is this? Where did you get this?
It was on the internet. I downloaded it. It's great. I love it.
Are you making some memes? What are you doing?
No. I'm doing because I like to take pictures. Although our photographer friend Chris Marquardt made me swear not to take pictures for the next 2 weeks, because I was complaining that I was kind of in a doldrums, and he said, "Okay, you can't take any pictures for 2 weeks." I said, "No, I want to now." But anyway, this camera imports very nicely into the Linux. That ThinkPad has an SD card slot. I use GThumb to import it. It looks just like Lightroom when it's importing. Does the same organizational things. I use Raw Therapy or Darktable. Actually, Raw Therapy is my new fave. And it does all the editing I want to do. It's great. And
I used to like Darktable.
Darktable's pretty good. It's fine. And Raw Therapy looks even better. It's very interesting. Both are non-destructive. Honestly, Adobe's hold on this market is gonna get a little shaky, especially as they're moving towards more and more towards forcing you to subscribe. I was so peeved that they, you know, have to buy a terabyte of storage to upload my photos to Adobe. I don't want to upload my photos to Adobe.
But you don't have to. You're not forced to do that.
No, but it's like I'm paying for it, right? It's part of the deal. You can't not pay for it. You can't take that out of your subscription.
Well,
I know it's only
$10
a month.
From a different standpoint, because I use the whole suite, you know, and I never even think about
anything. I'm just using the $10 photo thing, which is Photoshop and Lightroom. And actually, that's $10 a month. Pretty good price for that. But yeah. I figured
but you are paying for storage. That's right. That does require the storage on that package. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm happier with Linux, to be honest with you.
But you're using a Surface Studio in front of you.
Yeah, well, I haven't put Linux on this yet. But it might just be a matter of time.
How many artists do we really think are drawing on those? Like, that was the whole thing when that was released, is that all the ads were like that color wheel thing, and there was going to be, everyone was going to be painting on. There you go.
I have my knob. Well, I never use it. By the way, you caught me. I'm looking at a listing on Alibaba for the Nokia 3310, the real one, $14.
Pretty good. It's going to take probably 6 weeks to get to you from Alibaba, though, but that's fine.
And it may work.
Apparently, free shipping in the United States via the Netherlands. I don't understand that at all. Estimated delivery time, 33 days. That's one of the things I love about Alibaba. Sometimes it's like 18 months. You know, it's crazy. But for $15, now I can have a big one and a little one. I can have a matching set.
Leo, I love that.
Or I could pretend my son is growing up.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Louise, if I had one of those Surface studios like he has there, I would definitely use it. I have a Cintiq over here.
Yeah, this is like a Cintiq. Yeah.
Right. It would be totally useful for me. I'm not an illustrator, but I do use a Cintiq to edit photos a lot.
Actually, here's where Microsoft oddly went wrong with this. I think their Surface line is pretty cool. This is very expensive. It's $3,000 because you have this 30-inch touch screen, which is awesome. I mean, it's for what I'm doing and for an artist. We brought in an illustrator and let her play with it when it first came out. She fell in love with it. She loved it. She used the knob and all that stuff. But
the surface dial.
Whatever, you know, all these things. But the sad thing is they have this great screen, and then I guess to save money, they basically put the power of the computer is terrible. It's basically like a bad laptop. We actually upgraded it a little bit. But
are you on Surface Studio 1 or 2?
1. Is 2 better?
Yeah. Yeah, 2 is significantly better. Okay. So the processor is still roughly the same at 45 watt, so it's still technically
a
laptop.
It's a mobile processor.
Yeah, but now it has a GTX, 1060 in it.
Oh, okay. That would help.
Yeah, that's a serious GPU.
And we replaced it had slow 5400 RPM spinning.
Yeah,
so we replaced that with SSDs. Yeah. You know, we souped it up a little bit, but honestly,
the SSD slows it down. I mean, the hard drive slowed it down.
It's terrible. Yeah.
But the new one is just SSD as the only option, and it's the That's what I use. I use the Surface Studio 2.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, and it's been perfect. There's been no slowdowns.
Do you draw? What are you doing with it?
No. I use it as pretty much a normal computer that I occasionally have to sign a document on.
So you have it in the all-in-one mode.
Oh my
you have it upright like
blasphemy.
This.
Yep.
This is made for video podcasts because it's you know at a low angle and it's out of the way.
Yeah, 3x2 aspect ratio.
And I have the pen and the, what is it, dial? I never use, but I got them.
Sure. Yeah.
I could, actually, you know what I do with it? I do this because this is really awesome. I can, let me just find something. Here we go. Let's zoom in on this. And then if I double tap the top, it turns it into an image that I can then illustrate.
That's fun.
I love that.
I use this feature all the time. This is one of my favorite features.
All right. Now how much would you pay?
Totally worth $3,000.
Totally worth $3,000 so that I could draw a mustache on Satya Nadella floating in the clouds. Let's take a little time out, and we will continue. What a great panel. It's so nice to meet you, Louise. I've been a fan of your writing for so long, both at Motherboard and now at Wired, and I'm just thrilled to have you on the show. Thank you for taking
some time.
Thanks
a lot, Leo. I appreciate that.
Do you need to get home for a Game of Thrones or anything? I mean...
No, I'm not a Game of Thrones fan,
You're
actually.
Not?
So, no, I'm not a Game of Thrones fan, so I have nowhere to be after this.
Shocking. Because, you
I know.
If you told me I got to get home, I could make the show shorter because we don't want anybody to miss anything exciting.
Please lie to him. Please lie to him.
Somebody else might want to get home. Karsten.
Yeah, I need to go watch to the Game of Thrones pre-party, whatever people do before Game of Thrones.
You
I need to do that.
So you're really wasted by the time it comes on and you don't know, who's that? What's going on? Who are they? Why did he just killed? What?
I will say, I went to a Game of Thrones party maybe 2 weeks ago, and I don't think they were speaking English. I don't know how you watch that show without the subtitles on, because, like, it's barely in English. Like, maybe if you've been in that world for years, but, like, it's not that, of course, I had no idea what the plot was, but I, like, and everyone has a very strange name. I just think it would be such a barrier of entry, even if I started at the beginning, to, like, care about all this.
Language, yes.
Well,
totally agree.
If you really cared, you'd read all the books first. You'd make notes. You'd create a family tree. You'd perhaps go to the Game of Thrones wiki so you could keep up on all the different plot, subplot, and interplot lines. And I think it'd be trivial. It'd be easy to follow.
Right. Just a couple weeks.
That and turn on the
time.
Subtitles, which is what I do.
I hear you got to do that.
Ant Pruitt is also here, writer at Tech Republic, youtube.com/AntPruitt. Are you doing the Friday night video editing things?
I've switched off from doing those, but I'll do a couple other live streams here and there just to sort of pop in while I'm in the middle of just a random project. It's been pretty fun.
Showing people how you work with Informix databases or what?
Every now and then I show some folks VI.
Really? Nice. Very fancy.
I don't watch Game of Thrones, but I do have some banana pudding that I made that I want to get to, just so you know.
Do you like to eat it while it's hot? Is that why?
Oh, no. It's chilling now. I put it in the refrigerator before I came on the air with you
How
guys.
Do you know an elephant's in your refrigerator? The footprints of the banana pudding. Yes, I'm a dad. Daniel Rubino, executive editor, Windows Central. He is getting ready for the big festival week for people who cover Microsoft, the Build conference. So great. You got there a day early. You're getting ready. It's very exciting.
Yeah, we have our influencer party tonight, so nice. I don't think Game of Thrones. I'll be hanging out with other Microsoft nerds.
Who's an influencer in your
A Microsoft influencer?
Yeah.
I don't know. I do straddle the line, apparently, between media and influencer.
Oh, nice. But, so this is a party thrown by Microsoft for influencers?
In media, too, yeah. So it's a lot of the press people. We just get together.
It seems so contrary to my understanding of influencers is people on Instagram who have a million followers and they're tweeting about tea.
Yeah, it's not so much those people. Yeah, it's not like a lot of YouTube stars.
Microsoft's
like
not going to do the Fire Festival Part 2 or something.
Yeah, I think they just sort of lump media and everybody together into one category. Anyone who has a voice out there. Yeah.
That's cool. I'd like to see that. I'd like to go there.
These influencers actually understand object-oriented programming.
Like that.
Right, yeah.
All right, we'll be back. Lots more to talk about, including Google I.O., which is the next day. I wish these guys, they did it twice last year, they did it too. I wish they could figure out how to separate the developer conferences a little bit. But let's talk a little bit about Thousand Eyes. Now, this is something that if you are in a business where you have network operations, you have customers in the cloud, you have to deliver or you have to receive, you know that there's one of the biggest challenges of this is, and there's a good reason why they draw the cloud as a puffy little cloud. Things go in. Maybe they come out. Maybe they don't. Maybe they take a long time. And it's really hard to see what's going on in there. It can be very frustrating. Cloud's great for business, but as you gain that agility, you also increase risk. And most importantly, for DevOps and IT guys, you lose control. When your cloud app or your service goes down, do you even know what went wrong? You just go, it's the cloud. It's in the cloud somewhere. As you scramble to find the cause of the problem, trying to fix it, you're losing revenue. Employee productivity goes down. Maybe even you're damaging your brand. You know what a big deal it is when a cloud provider goes down. That's a big deal. You need instant visibility into the entire service delivery path from the cloud to your end user, and most especially including the portions you don't own or control. And that's what Thousand Eyes does. They really should call it a Million Eyes. This is an amazing service unlike anything you've ever seen before. And it came out of research from some years ago, graduate students who were trying to figure out how do you solve this problem. They put sensors, a massive array of vantage points all over the global internet, cloud providers, even down to the Wi-Fi in your local coffee shop. Thousand Eyes is a cloud-based program built to help organizations do the cloud right. Their unique path visualization technology extends beyond boundaries, allowing you to see, understand, and improve the experience for all your apps, all your services, all your websites. It's almost as if you're sitting there trying to peer through a kind of a streaked, dirty window, and somebody comes along with a squeegee, and you can see. Mohit Ladd, who's the founder, and Ricardo Oliveira, we're doing research at the UCLA Internet Research Lab. They were trying to visualize autonomous system topologies. Got an NSF grant. Then they said, this is something that the internet needs, and they created Thousand Eyes. And I got to tell you, this is an eye-opener. Squeegee that view of the world clean. Join the top banks, the enterprises, the SaaS companies, the world's largest and fastest-growing brands who rely on Thousand Eyes to do the cloud and do it right. Here's what you do. You want to find out more? Go to thousandeyes.com/twit and see what you've been missing. They've got an ebook there that you could provide the boss. 5 cloud migration challenges you shouldn't ignore. Lots of things to think about before you move to the cloud. If the cloud's important to you, whether it's right now or in the future, thousandeyes.com/twit. And we appreciate you using that URL. That lets them know you heard it here. And we really appreciate Thousand Eyes and the job they're doing. thousandeyes.com/twit. Thousand Eyes. Thrive in a connected world. Okay, let's see. Where do we go from here? Let's talk about, because this was, so next week's Developer Week. Last week was Quarterly Results Week, although Facebook threw in a developer conference last week too, F8. Did you know the future's private? Mark can say that over and over again. He can even stand under a giant sign that says the future is private. Somehow, I don't know if I believe him.
Yeah, I don't think anyone does. I think that's probably part of the problem. I kind of respect the idea that they're trying to turn this around, but Facebook's one of those things. I'm not a fan. I've never been a hardcore Facebook user. I barely use it for about 6 months for a high school reunion. Then I stopped using it and opted out of it. And that was about it. There's a point in your life where all your friends are married and have kids and you're not part of that crowd. And it gets really weird on Facebook. But I'm just not into the whole thing.
Now I'm feeling bad for you. That's kind of sad.
It's a choice. It's a choice.
I'm not on Facebook.
But like and that's unfortunate because I do understand the social nature of Facebook and people want to stay connected. And it seems like such a lost opportunity that what was potentially a huge idea is just getting so soured with all these controversies.
I got so excited when Mark wrote that blog post that I had killed my Facebook account. I reactivated it. And then I got talked down. People said, wait a minute. And actually at F8, he reiterated all these important things. We're going to be private. We're going to have end-to-end encryption. Wait till you see it. And they announced nothing. They made zero changes. Louise, am I wrong in thinking that Mark is full of it?
I think like he is kind of full of it, but I think that what the problem is, Facebook is grappling with this fundamental problem, is that there was a time when you added everyone you knew to Facebook, right? And now it's been too long. I've had Facebook for over a decade. So now it's everyone I've ever met in the last decade. And there's like nothing that's reasonable to share with all of those people at once.
Right.
Right. Like we don't really know what to do anymore. Like when I was a heavy Facebook user.
That's an interesting problem. I hadn't even thought of that.
Like that's the issue, is that like, why would you want to share with all these people you know who have kids now that you don't really talk to, or that like it's just photos of their kids? Like, and I think it's true for younger people too. Like, no one wants to share everything with their second cousin and some guy who was in their English class freshman year of college. Like, that doesn't really make sense. And the only way to fix that, I think, is to go private. So I think that Mark is addressing a genuine issue. And I think it's not just the privacy scandals. It's that, like you said, it's perfect for a high school reunion or a college reunion or something, because it's essentially a scrapbook. It's not really a live network anymore, I think, for a lot of people in North America, especially. And I think that, people like group chats, people like one-on-one chats, that's not going to go away. But like this weird, memory book is like super eerie and strange for a lot of people now. I mean, I think it's like, in a couple of decades, there's going to be more dead people than live people on Facebook. And that's going to be really weird. Mark has to do something about that.
The Oxford Internet Institute predicted that based on 2018 user levels, the dead will outnumber the living on Facebook by 2070.
That's actually,
by the way,
funny.
I will be one of them. I'm just saying. No, that is a weird number and a weird statistic. But you raised a more interesting point, which is that basically you and Daniel have both kind of outgrown Facebook, that Facebook served a purpose for you at one time, but there was no easy way to take Facebook with you into your modern life.
Yeah. Well, it's still offensive to unfriend someone, right? Like there's no, you can mute them, but like, there's not like a path to like, I haven't spoken to you in 6 years. I'm just going to delete you. Like that's not, we don't really have like, we don't like, that's still kind of weird. Well, and it's like, oh, I hope they don't notice.
What? So why wouldn't you do that? You don't want to hurt anybody's feelings?
It's just like not socially acceptable. Like we don't have the like normal social, contract. Like we already have the normal contract for the positive side, which is like, okay, you become friends with somebody. Maybe like after you hang out once or twice, you add them on Facebook. But we have never decided what you do in 6 years when like you haven't talked to them in 5 years and you don't, you have no way to say bye.
So this
you never
is
call
a problem.
Someone to tell them you're going to stop talking to them.
Yeah, like, you just ghost them.
You just ghost them, right?
So this is a problem. It sounds like one of Facebook's problems is no one under 25 uses it at all. The next problem apparently is there's a generation that did use it, but now feels like it doesn't have any meaning in their life. In fact, really, the big problem with Facebook is it's mostly old people like me that are using it.
Oh, yeah. Like they just released this new thing called Secret Crush, where it's going to be in countries where there's Facebook dating. Yeah. So basically what you can say is like, you can say you have a crush on Louise. And then if I put you on my crush list, then we're like matched together. And when this came out. Yeah. So it's horrible. And if you don't put the same person on your list, then you just like know that somebody had a crush on you, but you don't know who it is.
It's kind of like Tinder, though. Isn't that a little Tindery?
Yeah, it's kind of Tindery, except like it's people you know.
Facebook. It's like they get jealous of some other product or company, so they say, oh, we can do that. And then they don't do it right.
Yeah, but what I thought was interesting about this is that everyone saw it and they were like, oh my God, like teens, like the teens are going to love this. And it's like, no, I think that boomers are going to love this. Yeah. I really think that's who's going to be using it. Like, it's not going to be teens. Like, why would you? That'd be so awkward
teens
if you were like
better,
17.
Better ways to do it. They have Snapchat. They have other techniques that are better.
They're on TikTok. Like, they're not on Facebook.
Yeah.
Like, that's
and I think with school,
for.
Yeah, they don't have a trouble meeting people so much. I mean, I think older adults do because we're like wrapped up in jobs and we don't get out. So it's, you don't have that social stuff. I just get sort of my fundamental problem sort of with just venture capitalism and these companies in general, which is Facebook, unfortunately, was one of those companies, started off, like I said, as a really good idea for keeping people connected, but that was never enough, right? So as soon as these companies start taking venture capital money, it's all about growth. They have to constantly be growing at exponential rates forever. And that means you have to constantly be innovating and creating new things. And sometimes a Facebook could be just Facebook, right? It could just be this basic chat thing, like how we all yearn for the days of AIM. But they don't have that luxury. They have to always keep adding more stuff. And they went down that path of advertising. Years ago, we heard that, you know, media was dead. It's all going to be Facebook publishing. So they've gone away from their roots of what it was supposed to be with this. And in this point about not sharing certain things with, like, you know, college people versus a friend versus your coworkers is totally accurate. It's a really good, you know, point that what we share now just has very different audiences, and there's no way to segregate that. Now,
so
that's
is there
problem.
Something going to come along to displace it?
That's the problem. Nothing
I
has.
It. I yeah. doubt it.
Why not? Why is it some smart techie out there saying, I got a better
Facebook
idea?
Has,
well, I could make something new.
The hooks are way too big. You know, to have somebody just come in and push them out. If anybody can attempt to push them out, but it's
you
going
have
to be,
to be
really,
where all
really
your friends are. Where, even if you haven't seen them in 5 years, you have to be where they are.
It's a classic you know, problem of how to get other your friends effect. And family onto it. Yeah. Same with chat apps. It's such a lock into the system. But I mean, I think the possibility exists. If Facebook, but it's going to be one of those, like, it's like Microsoft from the 90s. If they hurt themselves enough, then people will leave. And that's so far Facebook's biggest threat has been itself. It's inflicting its own damage to itself, causing people to leave. But we haven't seen another company leverage or take advantage of that. It's just, it's a very difficult problem.
I disagree. I'm a little bit more optimistic. I think that Facebook was in a really good position to copy Snapchat, which they did. And they basically destroyed Snapchat. Snapchat's hanging on by a thread,
they
right?
destroyed it not with Facebook, but with Instagram.
Right. And they just stole Facebook's core feature, which is stories, just completely ripped it off, made a better version that has more daily users, right? They put it into WhatsApp. People like it in WhatsApp. I do not think that TikTok, that Facebook is well positioned to copy TikTok. I don't think that they're going to be able to copy TikTok. And that's what all the teens are using.
Yeah,
it's fundamentally different.
Isn't TikTok just another Vine, and Vine didn't survive? What makes you think TikTok's going to last? Teens are notoriously fickle. They're going to be doing something else. They came to TikTok through Musical.ly. They're just going to do something else in a year or two, or the next generation is going to say, oh, we like this instead. Do you really think that TikTok is a threat to Facebook?
Not to Facebook necessarily, but I think that there's at least some differentiation. Like, it's not just Facebook and Instagram, right? Like, there's another app that has a, you know, owned by a different
company. I
see what
you're saying. Yeah.
There's already a really strong international
presence. We don't need to
duplicate
Facebook. We need to think of new things.
Yeah, and they have a much more interesting revenue model, I think, that's not completely driven by advertising. Like, the kind of, like, sponsored content they do on TikTok, I think, is a little bit more innovative and not something that Facebook can easily copy. And there's, you know, it's been downloaded over a billion times. That's pretty good.
But you don't use TikTok. I mean, the TikTok's for 12-year-olds.
I love TikTok. I use TikTok all the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, I think TikTok's great. It's really fun.
Are you a creator? Do you make videos?
I make some videos, but I would not say, I'd say I mostly view rather than create. But I like making TikToks. It's fun. It's in a way that I think posting on Facebook is absolutely not.
Wow.
And it's definitely much more creative.
And your friend group is obviously must also use TikTok, right?
I would say most of my friends use TikTok or tech writers, so it's probably not a fair group of people. But I was surprised on TikTok how many... Yeah, the stereotype is that it's 13-year-olds, but there are, like, cops on TikTok. There are teachers on TikTok. There are moms on TikTok. Like, there's way too many people using it for it to just be teens. There's not enough teens. So
here's what baffles me.
Think.
This looks exactly to me like Vine.
Looks like everything else.
Why is this better than Vine? And why didn't Vine survive if this is such a good idea?
Well, wasn't Vine more about a financial decision, not necessarily, like, I'm not
they
sure
got, they
needed
got
to
sold.
Kill Vine.
Yeah,
but they didn't really need to kill Vine. And Vine had a lot of original creators who saw, you know, back, they later became YouTube stars or tried to transition to YouTube once Vine
really
went away.
Really big YouTube stars. Like, a lot of those people succeeded. You know, it's not as though, like, the creators on there were bad or, like, weren't popular by any means.
So it's ironic because Twitter bought Vine and by doing so helped YouTube, which is just weird. Okay.
Yeah.
Two things. First, I don't think I'll ever understand the whole social media issue far as unfriending somebody. If this were just regular everyday life and somebody I haven't talked to in 5 years, it just goes on. Life just goes on. I don't bring them up. They don't bring me up. And it just, life goes on. The difference is, it seems like it's affecting people by going in and clicking unfollow. Does it send notifications when someone unfollows you or what have you?
People know they see their number go down, right? Like the number of followers they have.
It's still not saying Aunt Pruitt unfollowed you because
they find out who the culprit is. And I remember even on Twitter, this was a thing. You can get a Twitter app and see your followers and who you follow, and it would actually show you who unfollowed you. Yeah, and it was just like, oh, and then it's psychological. It really messes with you because you're like, what did I say on May 4th?
What? I noticed that the more I tweeted, the more people left. So if you say nothing on Twitter, that's when you're following
that. Or just bring up politics.
Well, anything you say is going to offend somebody. You're going to lose followers. So shut up. And my account just goes up all the time.
Or own the offensiveness, which is usually what I try to do. So.
It's a very... The world of social media, can we agree, is broken, badly broken, and not good for humans and other living things?
Yeah, I have a lot of thought on it. Because, like, humans are, we're psychotic and social. Like, we're just obsessed with the need to have human contact at any level, no matter how far and distant it is, and seeing someone and being able to share and, you know, and really just go out there and create. And part of it stems from that creative ability as humans. Some of it is just the fact we talk, and we're the only species that talks, at least at this sophisticated level. And we just have this need inside to constantly share, which is why every computational program that comes out, the first thing that people come up with are like ways to talk to other people, whether it's a messaging. Like if you look back in the internet days, like the early days, it was messaging, right? I brought up AIM earlier.
Far enough in the internet that the initial experiences of the internet, and this is pre-web, this is Gopher and Archie and stuff, were very sterile. Usenet was, you know, the news groups were one way, but I think you're exactly right that there was the strong pressure was to become a communication medium, and that really the internet did not become a mass tool until it was about communication. And in fact, you could probably make the argument about computers in general that it wasn't until they became communications devices that they got mass acceptance. But this is the weird thing about social media is it appeals to people who have isolated themselves because of technology.
Yes.
With pseudo relationship.
I'll admit that. It is a pseudo relationship for me.
It's not a healthy thing, I don't think. No. I don't think those relationships...
I'm a really, really, really stubborn introvert, and I don't have a lot of... What do you call them? IRL friends, in real life friends.
See, this is why you and I get along, because I'm the same way. I bet most of the people listening to this show are stubborn introverts.
You know, and I'm totally fine with just spending my time in these four walls and doing what I do and hanging out with my family. But I enjoy the friends that I have made socially on social media, whether it's Twitter or Google+, long live Google+, and just talking to them here and there over my mobile phone or over the computer. And it's okay. It's just not, I don't feel any pressure about the social media stuff the way other people are feeling it with this whole friending and unfriending and likes and dislikes. And it just, I don't get it.
You don't
I get it though. If you're a teenager and you go on Instagram, you see your friends and they're out doing something on a Friday night and having the time of their lives and you're watching on your phone from home, That FOMO. Hits you. As a teenager, that yeah. stuff is like
FOMO.
Yes. From a teenage standpoint, that does make sense, you know.
Well, we're talking about two different things, I think, is the issue. Is that like the issue with Facebook and why it's uncomfortable is that what Facebook did and Instagram is that they leveraged your real life social graph, right? Like the people you friend on Facebook are mostly people that you know from real life first. And that's like Facebook's value is that like it actually has a social graph that mirrors the real world. Yeah, I like Twitter better. I like TikTok better because I'm following people I don't know for the most part from real life. And it is a window into something new. Whereas like Facebook is a window into like my past because it's everyone I actually know.
Ah, interesting. Okay. You like it. You don't know the people you follow on Twitter.
Well, because it's something new, right? Like I'm not seeing like, you know, an acquaintance baby or something. I'm seeing like, you know, someone who lives on the other side of the world or someone who has a different viewpoint from me. You know, I think that's more interesting.
Maybe this is just me, but one of the reasons I left Twitter, I kind of, my account's still there because I can't force myself to throw away 500,000 followers. But one of the reasons I stopped using it is I realized I was using it as a distraction. I was using it as like, I'm bored. I'm going to look at a Twitter feed. And it's good at that, right? Because it's a bunch of stuff. It's all, it's you know, boom, boom, boom. It's very dazzly. And I realized that wasn't a healthy use of that. That was like crack. That was like, you know, jacking into something because I was bored. And it went, oh, yeah. And I didn't think that was a healthy thing. Is that
but
just
you can
me?
Say that about any of the social media
all
platforms.
Of it is. Yeah, all of it ultimately is.
Yeah, I don't think we've like learned how to reckon with that. And I don't think we're going to know. We're all kind of the test generation of this, right? Like none of us have been using any of this stuff for more than, you know, 10, 15 years. Like maybe you use Usenet or something like that, but the real like supercharged news feeds are only what, less than 10 years old for the most part.
Yeah.
So I think that we just don't know exactly how this is like, you know, messing with our brains. Well, I think it's hard.
Sometimes I mean, think that I am, because I have been using this going back to the well in the mid 90s and the Usenet. I have been using this for more than 20 years and I am starting to pull back, not liking what it's done and how I killed my Facebook account. I killed my Instagram account. At first I killed my Twitter account. Then I thought better of it, but maybe I still will.
I'll take your followers.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's hard to throw away that many followers. But I'm thinking that maybe in 5 or 10 years, Louise, you'll be doing the same thing. You'll have come to that same point.
Yeah, I definitely think I have. I deleted Instagram. I re-download Instagram. I delete Twitter. I re-download Twitter. Yeah. Like, I definitely have, like, a love and hate relationship with this stuff. And I think it's definitely, like, fundamentally unhealthy in a way that, like, no one is like, oh, I'm going to stop reading books because, like, that's making me feel bad, right? Like, we don't have that same kind of relationship with other forms of media. Maybe television. People do try and watch less television. But I don't think it's the same, like, this is hurting a deep part of my brain right now.
It is exactly the phenomenon that happens with any addiction.
Although, I would say
in the process of getting off an addiction, that's exactly what addicts do. Is we go, oh, yeah, get rid of it all. And then we go, oh, I can't leave you. And then we come back. There's this push-pull until eventually either it goes one way or the other. I think that's a classic syndrome. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Daniel.
Oh, no, I was just going to say with Netflix, wasn't there that study out recently showing that people are having less coitus because they're binge-watching shows
We
late
will
at
know
night.
If in a few years the birth rate
population.
Plummets.
That's what they're citing, though. They're just citing some of these
Is it already plummeting? And,
yeah, apparently.
Damn you, Stranger Things!
But regarding social media, too, like, I mean, I usually unplug on Twitter on the weekends. Like, I really don't look at it, and I take forced time off. We have phones now that tell you how much time you're using, you know, into better, which is, I think, a big harbinger of all this stuff and really showing you the problem, but also that we recognize it, right? That we're trying to now put in restraints on this so that we're not looking at our phones too much. But we are constantly surrounded by data, information, and we want it, we crave it, but we do need to take breaks from it. And I think people are becoming a little bit aware of this more, and it's going to have to evolve eventually. Education, schools are going to have to just, and, you know, like a civics course, I'll have to teach you about online civility and how to best use social. It needs to be integrated at some level so people have this information for themselves.
Totally agree. Now, one more thing, getting back to the whole F8 statement from Mr. Zuckerberg. I know most of us are like, yeah, he's full of crap, but is that fair? Should we give them the chance to earn our trust back?
I agree 100%. I am going to give him the chance. The minute he does this, I won't recreate my Facebook account. But at this point, they've done nothing.
Right.
I think business-wise,
I don't see anything wrong with sleeping with one eye open, you know, but give them a shot, you know.
They're going to have to do this just for business reasons. And that's always sort of the worst reason. Like, they're not doing this because all of a sudden they're like, you know, we decided we're going to be a leader in this area. They're doing it because they're about to face a massive fine, a fine so large that they're like, don't focus on how much the fine
is. $3 billion to $5 billion.
Yeah, you know, so they're, right. Don't look at that, you know. But so they're doing it from, but they have to do it for business reasons. They're publicly traded. They have stock. They have, it's very public what they do. So they're going to turn this around because the public is turning against them. So it's a PR thing. And that doesn't mean, you know, listen, Microsoft had to do that too, right? A lot of companies go through this stage where they're just not publicly admired anymore and they have to change. And that's fine. It's market pressures changing for hopefully the good, but it does remain to be seen. But I think they will have to do this because people are going to just demand it.
Yeah. I, for one, am not looking forward to a world where Instagram DMs, Facebook Messenger, and WhatsApp is all integrated on the back end. I think that sounds like a nightmare. That's one aspect of this pivot to privacy that I'm not really looking forward to.
I do wish, though, that there were kind of a unified platform, because that we mentioned that earlier. I don't actually hanker for AIM, but it would be nice to have one messaging platform that worked with everything.
Trillion.
Yeah.
Trillion. Pigeon.
Yeah. Pigeon.
Yeah. Those were the days, right? Go ahead.
I was just saying, for like seamless reasons, it is nice to have something kind of streamlined. But like, if you don't want to be on Facebook and you just want to be on Instagram, it sucks to have that integration. And I think that part of the reason they're doing that is to, stave off antitrust accusations that they own three of the biggest, social and messaging platforms in the world. And instead, they're going to say, actually, they're just one platform.
Yeah.
You know, they're not three platforms anymore. And I think that we have to look at kind of the reasons why they're doing that.
Well, that's exactly the reason I wouldn't want to do whatever that platform is. I wouldn't really want to do Apple Messages either. I'd love it if Signal or some third party became so dominant worldwide we could all use it.
I'm not a Facebook user and haven't been for a couple years now. Did the whole account deletion, but I do use Instagram very regularly.
Well, you're a photographer.
Right. I have to do it to help try to grow my small business. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But am I essentially a Facebook user because I'm using Instagram?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Mark gets the same information.
Yeah. I mean, I know they're getting the whole data and whatnot, but I just thought about that here.
I don't think from your point of view. So there's two answers to that, because from Mark's point of view, he's perfectly happy to have you use any of the above. But from your point of view, it is a very different experience. One of the reasons people like Instagram is because it's not Facebook. It's just pictures.
That's me. Yeah, I'm in that category. Yeah.
I wish that every ninth picture weren't an ad for something that I really don't need but really have to buy.
Dude, you've had to talk about the creepy Instagram ads and the microphone listening to you thing, right? Because that's 100% true. I don't care what anybody says. It's not coincidence. I could be talking about something weird. I've had so many examples in real life about this. And then I turn on Instagram and an ad shows up for that specific topic. And I'm like, come on.
That's conspiracy theory. I reject that entirely, except you're probably right. My daughter swears she did this experiment with her friends. They said into the phone, baby duck, baby duck, baby duck, baby duck. Then all of a sudden she started getting ads for baby ducks in her Instagram feed.
Oh, wow. I don't believe it.
Buy it. I can't imagine that's happening.
It happened so many times.
Technically, the difficulty, you know this, you're an expert in security. Help me, Louise. They would have to be sending data back from everybody's phones all the time, parsing that data, looking for keywords, and then changing the ads. That's a lot of work.
There's no evidence. There's no evidence. But there is some evidence that, you know, it has a lot to do. The ads that you see have a lot to do with your social connection. So if you're hanging out with somebody that you're Instagram friends with and you guys are talking about something that, like, maybe they have looked up recently, there is a chance more that you're going to see an ad for that. You know, if your friend's like, hey, I went to this really great store and she's telling you about that and you get an ad for it, that has more to do with the fact that you guys are in the same location.
That's what I think.
She just Googled that store. You know, there's a lot of other factors here that are in geolocation ads. Do you have your location tracking on? There are a lot more questions that I think are creepier, really, than them just listening to you.
I agree.
You know, what they know about you.
I think we underestimate the power and value of the shadow profiles. that yeah. there's so many data points. Your data smog, your data exhaust is everywhere all the time. And what's changed is now the ability to gather that, analyze it, and the willingness of companies to share that data across silos. That's giving, I think that's, it is creepier, really, because it means they know a lot more about us.
And it changes really quickly. And I encourage anyone to just like start looking up a random topic on Instagram and see how quickly their ads change. One of my favorite recent examples is my friend was telling me how all these celebrities got lip injections. And I was like, I don't know if I believe that. I want to see the before and after pictures. So, you know, this isn't really like me, but I started, you know, looking up like hashtag lip injection or like, you know, and I was getting bizarre ads immediately for like, you know, facial surgery. I was getting ads for like ab workouts, like all this weird stuff that happened like only after looking up like maybe one or two hashtags. So that's what it is.
Do you think it would work if I search for angel investors? I could use a couple extra dollar signs, you know.
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's obvious, though. I mean, you're sending them a strong signal when you do hashtag lip injections.
Right. But I think people don't realize when they're like mindlessly looking at something, like even briefly, or they click on something in their explore page or they have their location tracking on. I don't think they realize how sensitive these systems can be. Sure, that's a really overt thing, but you might do something more subtle and not really understand how that's creepy or why it feels like you're being listened to when you're really not.
So according to the New York Times, the FTC chairman seems to have the votes to approve a settlement. So we don't know what that number will be. The Facebook put aside $3 billion, but it could be more, up to five, they say. One of the biggest issues, according to the Times, is whether to hold Mark Zuckerberg personally liable for future violations.
He's the boss. Why not?
They won't do it. They won't do it. It'll set a precedence, and that's going to be dangerous for corporations.
Corporations may be people, but the presidents, the chairman, the founders, those aren't people.
I mean, it should be, but I don't think they'll do it.
There actually is a little bit of precedent here already. So when the TikTok violation came down, I think, what was it, in March? Maybe March, where they violated the Children's Privacy Protection Act because they were collecting data on people under 13. And two FTC commissioners actually wrote in a letter after that fine came down and said, we think that the people running TikTok should be personally held accountable for this. And they weren't. But the FTC has already said that, you know, we don't want to go down this path where we just fine these companies chump change instead of actually holding the executives accountable. And I think, especially in Facebook's case, where you have a super omni-powerful CEO like Zuckerberg, who basically controls the company, even though it's public, I think he's a perfect person to be held personally accountable.
Yeah.
It would be the largest FTC fine ever against a tech company. The biggest they've done up to now was a mere $22.5 million against Google in 2012. $3 billion to $5 billion. I wonder if they even have the votes to do that. I'm thinking that in this current climate, maybe would be hard to do. I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't see how we're going along as a society where when crap hits the fan, leadership just sort of tucks her tail and run and points at the subordinates. You know, when you're the leader of the pack, you're given directions and guidance and so on and so forth. And with all of that success, it's usually a reflection of your leadership. So when crap goes wrong, why not just stand up for it and say, hey, you know, I hold some responsibility here.
Yep. No, I agree 100%. I mean, they should be more like how the military, you know, they take the responsibility for when a company is successful and they get all the bonuses and, you know, greatest
That's
CEO
true.
Ever.
That's
they put
true.
Them on Bloomberg magazine with halos over their head. Yeah. But then, you know, when stuff goes wrong, all of a sudden they're not personally responsible. And so there really should be this higher level. I'm, you know, skeptical of the last few years, especially the environment, how we've been treating this, though. I agree. I don't even $3 billion, I'd be surprised. It seems like everything's a letdown. You always hear like this could happen, and it's always a lot less than that. So,
Facebook's arguing you can't hold Mr. Zuckerberg responsible for the acts of his 35,000 employees. Except if you want to be effective in all this, I think holding him responsible might actually work better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's fine in a company not organized like Facebook, where, you know, Zuckerberg has control of the majority of the voting shares. So he is responsible. You know, I think if it was Jeff Bezos, for example, he controls, what, 12% of the company or something? Right. You know, he's not the one just making right. all of the decisions there. Whereas Zuckerberg designed Facebook that he's basically the dictator of Facebook. So this isn't a democracy.
That was my understanding. Yeah. You know, and yeah. I listen to Kara Swisher a lot, and it. She seems to think that if something is going to go down, what's her name, Sandberg? She's going to catch a lot of heat.
Sheryl Sandberg, yeah. Right. She yeah. got the heat for hiring the PR firm that ended up, what was it, investigating. I can't remember the deal, but it was nasty. It just shows right. you. You know, if you let enough time pass, everybody goes, you know, there was that thing. I don't remember. Anyway, it's over now. So what's on Instagram? How's that Twitter feed? Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. I love FreshBooks. I first discovered it back in 2004. I was complaining to Amber MacArthur when I used to have to go to Canada to do the TV show up there, and I was complaining to her because I have to send an invoice at the end of every month, and I hadn't done it in a few months because I'm lazy, and then they didn't pay me, and I thought, this is terrible. She said, oh, there's a brand new company just started up in Toronto. In fact, I'll tell you what this. She said it's a Web 2.0 company. I'll give you some idea of the time frame. Called FreshBooks, and they make it really easy to do invoices. So I started, and it was like it was incredible. They do the currency conversion. I could use the FreshBooks app, take pictures of receipts, automatically get them into my expense report, and I got paid faster. In fact, on average, you get paid, according to FreshBooks research, twice as fast, because it turns out the FreshBooks invoice allows you to accept online payments. Credit card payments on, and if there's a button right in the invoice that says pay, and your clients, they don't like paying bills anymore than you like sending bills. So if you make it easy for them, they actually pay faster. You'll spend less time on paperwork, more time doing what you love. You didn't get into this to do invoices, right? But you got to do the invoices. FreshBooks makes it easy. And by the way, simply by doing the invoices, by channeling the expenses, keeping track of your time and hours, you're actually doing your books. It's accounting software. So you can get the reports you need when it's tax time automatically. You don't need any accounting experience. It'll just do it for you easily. So it starts with professional looking invoices. It starts with automatically recording expenses, tracking time. But by the time you're done, you've got it all, everything you need to understand. For instance, something I never knew as a freelancer, am I making money? I'd know that at the end of the year when tax time came. With FreshBooks, you can always go to your FreshBooks dashboard and know exactly where you stand. Tax calculations are done automatically. Look, if you own a small business, if you're a freelancer, there's a lot to do. At least this part can be easy. FreshBooks, it's used and trusted by small business owners in over 120 countries. 24 million people have used it. It's grown a long way since I started using it, and I love it, and you will love it too. Join the 24 million people who use FreshBooks. Visit FreshBooks.com/twit. You'll do us a favor by putting This Week in Tech in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That way you'll get 30 days free, so you do yourself a favor. And we thank FreshBooks for supporting Twit. That's FreshBooks.com/twit. And enter This Week in Tech to get 30 days free. FreshBooks is awesome. I love those FreshBooks guys. So, Facebook, Google, didn't you mentioned this actually, Daniel? Google's growth was only 17%. Great,
not good enough.
Great gasps from Wall Street. How dare they? Is there anything to say? I guess the problem for Google is advertising revenues are not growing as fast as they used to.
Yeah, I mean, this gets down to the same issue with Apple's facing, right? Which is Apple's, you know, primary source of revenue is the iPhone. And the iPhone did very well for many years and is a cash cow. But as phone sales start to plateau, Apple's facing an issue here and trying to, you know, how are they going to continue to grow and make money? Google has this issue a bit too. You know, as I mentioned, $30 billion out of that $36 billion in revenue is from advertising. That's an enormous amount of money. Whereas, you know, they get $5.7 billion, I think, from their other products and services. And the Pixel, you know, which gets all the headlines, is barely a blip. It's not even a top 10 of smartphones. It's huge for tech people who talk about this stuff all the time. But for consumers and the market, it's not.
No.
And so, and then they're losing a ton of money on things like Waymo and their, you know, their bet bets that they're doing, which is fine. You know, companies should have that reserve fund. They have plenty of money to explore new ideas, and they should be doing that. And they're increasing their R&D. But the advertising is getting more competitive. There are a lot of companies that are forming alliances out there or trying to and take them on. And it's a, you know, the nature of the web itself is changing how we view ads, how to monetize things. It's never a secure thing. But I mean, financially, they're not going away, right? Google's not going under. But they have to be wary of this stuff about how they're going to make money eventually without just advertising.
They also took a €1.5 billion loss due to the EU's fine. And, of course, more EU fines look like they're coming along the way. They even mentioned headwinds in the smartphone market. Even though the Pixel isn't a big part of their revenue, they're having trouble selling it. They're expected to announce on Tuesday, when Google I.O. happens, a lower-cost Pixel 3, the Pixel 3a, maybe announce a new Google Assistant with a camera and a screen, a new home hub, and perhaps even a new smartwatch on it based on Android Wear. So we'll look for that. Sundar Pichai described the Google Home smart speaker as a market leader. Put that in quotes. It's a market leader, and so it's doing better than the Apple HomePod. We can agree on that.
Yes.
It's somewhat smaller sales than the Amazon Echo, but you know, it's somewhere in between the two of those. Kind of like web services. You've got Amazon, you got Microsoft, you got Google. They're in there.
Google though has the most growth though for home stuff, right? I think that's where it comes down to the concern against Amazon. Amazon seems to they have the mind share right now, but Google seems to have the more devices, more partners getting this stuff out there. I mean, I think Spotify wanted to just send me a Google Home thing when I signed up. So they're just giving these little pucks away.
Oh, they're giving them away now. Yeah. Absolutely. And all for all sorts of things.
I'm just not convinced that market is that big. Like, I think the home speaker market is going to...
think it'll plateau?
Real soon.
I think the use cases are pretty small. I personally don't have one for privacy reasons, number one. I think they've gotten enough bad press that a lot of people are kind of weirded out by them. And the use case that they're basically a smart speaker, right? Like, that's kind of it. Like, you know, there's all these skills you can load onto it to do all these other things. But, like, beyond, like, hey, what's the weather? And, like, you know, play Beyonce. Like, I just don't really see these major use cases. And I don't think it's going to be a major revenue stream for most of these companies. I think Amazon is smart because it, you know, order dog food, I think, is a better use case than, you know, doing Google searches on it like that. I think the mobile experience is just so much better. Why would I embarrass myself by like being like, hey, when I can just go on my iPhone? It's really just, I don't get it.
Well, you're alone. I do it all the time. I would be embarrassed if anybody were around, but it's just me.
The Amazon example is so good, Louise. Like, I mean, that was its goal, right? So Amazon's intent for this wasn't like, oh, let's have smart speakers. It was, let's give users another tool so they can order Amazon services. And it's like, you know, you just say it and order. And that was the concept. But I think it was The Intercept ran a story last year showing how only 2% of like users actually use it to order stuff on Amazon. So in that regard, like conceptually, this device is a complete failure. It's in a lot of homes and it has the mind share, but it's not doing. So then it comes down to, all right, where are they making money off of this thing from? Is it like Spotify and selling associate, like, you know, they get referrals or something like that? I don't know. And Google, of course, is going to try to monetize all the data they can collect from you. But I agree. We're still not used to talking to computers, partly because of natural language. It's just not there. By the way, teaser. We will see more of this from Microsoft this week. There are advances coming for stuff in this area.
A new Invoke?
Yeah, maybe not. I don't know about that.
I am the only person in the world. I have in my office a Google Home speaker, an Amazon Echo show, and a Harman Kardon Invoke.
It's a good speaker.
I could talk to any assistant I want anytime. Yeah.
But they do have limited
useful.
Uses.
Yeah, really useful. I don't use the Evoke much.
They're basically jukeboxes and things you ask random questions to. But it's like, how does it evolve? I will say Google's, you know, they're supposed to be teasing this new hub thing. And we've talked about this on Windows Central. Microsoft was exploring this idea years ago. And I think when you add a screen to these things, like Alexa Show
or
the Echo Show.
That's pretty
they
cool.
They do become... Yeah, it does now all of a sudden change the user interaction model, and it becomes a lot more interesting. And so I think this concept of a 10-inch device that is a centralized hub, I think is something, the next stage for these devices, and it's a little bit more interesting, especially as we get more and more smart homes and connect things up to each other. A centralized repository is interesting. I wish Microsoft was going to do, they were supposed to do something here. I'm not sure if they're still going to, because again, if I have to choose between companies, you know, Apple for security, Microsoft next for privacy, and then it's like, I really don't want to do Google or Amazon, a little sketchy of their stuff. So
what do you worry about, if Louise, with having these, go ahead, and then I'll talk to Louise. Go ahead, Dan.
If you're going to add these home services or what have you and put screens on them that are more than 2% larger than my phone.
Well, that was the Google Home Hub. That really was tiny.
It makes no sense. They're all voice activated and whatnot, but you can't see the screen from the other side
of the
room.
There are larger ones, Lenovo, and they're large. JBL, they're larger screens. We'll see what Google's supposed to announce something Tuesday. Luis, you said something surprised me. You have privacy concerns about having a voice assistant in your house?
Yeah, I definitely don't want a smart speaker in my house. I think that we just saw that report in Bloomberg that they did not have them properly anonymized, and they were having people listen to these to improve their voice recognition software, which is fine. I think you should be doing that, but they weren't even properly, you know, it was attached. You could have someone's home address and the recording inside their house. And, you know, there was that extremely disturbing anecdote in the Bloomberg story where they said that someone who was listening to these, their job is to, you know, listen to these recordings, overheard a sexual assault. That's horrifying.
Yeah, and what do you do when that happens?
And basically Amazon, the anonymous employee said that Amazon's response is that it's none of our business. And I just don't think, we were just talking about, exchange here. Like, what am I really getting in return? I totally agree having a screen, but then there's this weird question of like, where does that go? We don't really have it's not very cute to have like this kind of ugly, bulky screen on your counter. Kind of reminds me of a desktop phone. Like, that's kind of what we kind of removed from our kitchen counter, you know? Yeah. I'm hoping that we get to the point where I would like a screen where I can just be like, you know, show me the best apple pie recipe and something comes up. That would be nice. Or, you know, tell me the weather and it comes up like that. But I kind of want that. I want the movie fantasy. I want it built into the wall. I don't really want like this ugly Lenovo screen or the Facebook portal or whatever that's like on my table.
But
I just don't think
you're not doing
that
your
first
part.
Stepping stone.
You have to buy these crappy versions to support development so that you can eventually get the magical version.
Right. I just don't think it's there yet.
I consider this my job. I have to use all these things. It's the same reason I bought a Tesla. It's not because I thought this is the greatest thing ever, but I want to support the future of electric cars.
Like, honestly, though,
I'm a good person.
If you have $250 or something to spend on one of these things, $300, I would much rather get a really nice looking Bose speaker or a really nice one of those like long, whatever, those bar speakers and have that in my house and be able to play really nice music in the sound bars. Like, that's just a nicer item, I think, to have than like a Facebook portal on my, you know, kitchen counter so I can talk to grandma. Like,
I used to have a Facebook portal on my kitchen counter.
Wow.
I hear they're pretty good. I haven't tried one, but I hear that they're actually pretty good.
Yeah, there's one drawback.
That motion tracking was pretty cool. Yeah. I give him that.
I gave them both to Burke to take apart. And he broke one, right? He couldn't take it apart without smashing it. It wasn't
way to go, Burke.
It's glued. I was hoping we could do something. I don't know. I wanted to put you guys in Facebook portals instead of these TV screens. I just have three Facebook portals on here.
I want that Snowden. What is that? He like rolls out in a little robot. Yeah, I want one of those.
Yeah, I bought one of those too. They don't.
Jesus.
With regards to this earning call in Q1, it's still Q1. I don't think it's enough to be all panicky about it the way Wall Street tends to be.
That's just the way Wall Street is.
Though, yeah. Right?
I mean, you know, I will never understand that. And we go through this every single year, even with Apple, as they sit on a bankroll that's more money than anybody else on the planet, it seems like. And we stress out and say, oh my goodness, Apple's in trouble. And then when Q4 rolls around, we're like, whoa, Apple is just so awesome and so great. It's because those guys know what they're doing. Most of these companies know what they're doing.
There's real pressures with Apple, though.
There's a reason I paid more taxes this last April than Google paid. There's a reason for that. They
you
know
think
what
that's a
doing.
Good thing?
I
you
clearly
didn't.
Don't.
Amazon paid zero taxes. Halliburton paid zero taxes.
Don't get me started on Amazon and taxes. Like, it just like, that makes me so angry. But the thing about, you know, Q1 for Google versus, you know, Q1 for Apple is that, you know, the part of the reason that you might not be seeing these things in Q1 is that Apple will have, you know, Black Friday and the holiday season.
Giant fourth quarters when, or whatever. I guess it's giant
it
Q1.
It always happens.
Because that's when all the new iPhones come out. And then the Q2 is a little bit of a slowdown.
Right, exactly.
But that's honestly, true. That I think is a malign influence on the way these companies work, is that there is so much pressure from the stock market to show the super high growth levels that the market really will ding them for even the slightest infraction, makes these companies pushing in the wrong direction in many cases, trying to appease the market instead of innovate or do the right thing.
I mean, Tesla is a good example of this recently, although people could argue about Elon Musk. But like the fact is, it's like they shipped way more cars this year, the same time this year than they did last year. And so they're having significant growth, but they're not able to meet sort of the numbers. There's some of the numbers they set themselves internally, but there is this pressure, but then again, their stock hasn't suffered nearly as much as the shorts would want them to suffer.
Right.
So, their stock is actually doing all right considering the bad news that they had in the last few days. As far as Apple, though, I do see Apple is sitting on a ton of money, so that's good. But, you know, as a publicly traded company, it is about what comes next. And this issue with the iPhone, I think, is really interesting because I've been saying for 2 years now that smartphones, they're plateauing, we're leveling off. And this is a good thing. This isn't bad news. It's a commodification of these devices as they reach a maturity level, just like how we don't really do this podcast. We don't talk about like refrigerators, the latest tech in refrigerators.
Right.
Even though I guarantee you Samsung has a brand new refrigerator at Best Buy right now that's like really neat. But it's because it's just technology, stuff we get used to. And phones are going through this right now. And Apple's facing the pressure the most. If you look at China, they're having problems there. They've had to cut prices. You have companies like Huawei, who I've been saying the Chinese companies for years were accused of copying Apple and Samsung, and they were blatantly. But they've gone now from that to like now they're surpassing Apple and Samsung at a lower cost. And I see what China is doing in tech, especially mobile, is going to be one of the biggest threats, probably more for so Korea. I see LG exiting smartphones eventually. Samsung, I think, is going to have a real challenge. They're chasing Apple, and now they're getting beat from behind in the low to mid-range smartphone segment. And you're going to see, you know, Apple have to – and they're pivoting with services, but their services are solely dependent on the devices they sell themselves. Because if you're if you have a Windows PC and an Android phone, you're probably not using a lot of Apple services. And so they're going to have to find this balance between growing their services, but they have to keep device sales going out. And it can't be just enough to be chugging along. So I don't know how they get around that.
And the problem with Apple is that we don't really think about this when you live in the U.S., but an iPhone is a luxury product. And I think that market tops out somewhere. You know, if you're in a third world country, you're not getting an iPhone. You just aren't. And they don't have any interest in tapping into those markets. You know, they kind of tried with the SE that was supposed to be for the BRIC countries. You know, they've done a little bit of that, but I don't think they have much interest in developing a mid-tier iPhone that's going to cost $400 or something. They don't want to do that. And there's only, you know, so much they can grow. And people are holding on to their iPhones longer, which Apple hates. Sure. It's really great for the environment. I've had my iPhone 7 for almost 24 months now. I have no intention of getting a new phone because why would I? I think the difference between the 7 and the latest phones that are out right now is just not that meaningful. Because I'm not going to replace my fridge every year. That's insane. It's the same problem.
It's the same price. You get a fridge for less than an iPhone.
It's true.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
I think this has created a little psychosis in Apple, though. And this worries me a little bit. And this is from a personal experience. So we, Patrick Delahanty, one of our great engineers, wrote a very simple program for the Apple TV that allows you to watch and stream a new show of ours called Hands on Tech. It's a review show. And it reviews everything, not just Apple stuff. It reviews Android stuff and Windows laptops and other stuff. When he submitted it to Apple, Apple sent it back saying, yeah, you can't have images of non-Apple products in the images the promo images of your show. They rejected it. And we've actually heard from other Apple, from other developers who write stuff for our network that, yeah, anytime they have an Android phone or a laptop from Windows in any of the collateral material, they have to delete it before Apple will accept the program. Now, I think that we deleted it and Apple accepted it. It was like, but what kind of weird paranoia is that where, oh, we don't want anybody to know that there's anything besides Apple products?
That's like North Korea level.
Sounds like that's nutsy. Paranoia. Now, the stream will have reviews of other products. Are they going to not like that? I don't understand. They said, well, we just don't want any pictures of other people's devices in our materials.
Well, remember, my favorite example of kind of App Store insanity is, can't remember what it's called, but this must have been in like 2014. There was a mobile game about working in Foxconn, right? It was like a social commentary on how awful it was to make iPhones in Foxconn, and they wouldn't let that game in the App Store. And there have been a lot of cases like that. You know, Steve Jobs famously didn't want porn on the iPhone. There was no, however, they promoted the Sports Illustrated Bikini Edition app.
Which is so more exploitative than some porn apps.
Right. And there's been these, you know, they wouldn't allow third party bikini calendar apps, but so, you know, the Sports Illustrated thing was fine. And I think there's, and now there's going to be a case before the Supreme Court about whether the App Store is a monopoly. And I think that they've been really tightly controlling that. I think in some good ways, you can guarantee that for the most part, the apps you downloaded from the App Store are going to be safe, which is a good thing. You know, you can't really say that about Google Play. However, I think that they're now running into issues where, you have these insane rules that really seem, they invoke antitrust questions about how closely are they guarding that. And that's a good, really good source of money. It's, 30% revenue share of every subscription, everything that's bought in there, which is something that Spotify and Netflix are resentful of because Apple won't let those companies take the full share of the subscription.
Yeah. I think sometimes companies are worried about the wrong thing. And
I still
about your app,
the whole environmental talk from Apple with using all of those quote unquote recycled parts for the last iPhone.
Yeah. Well, they do have a robot that could take them apart.
Right.
You're using all of these recycled parts, but your margins are still huge on far as what people are going to pay to get that. You know, it just blows my mind.
Apple's financial results for Q2, quarterly revenue, they still make a lot of money, $58 billion. Okay, a decline year over year of 5%. Quarterly earnings, $2.46. That was down 10%. International sales counted for 61% of the quarter's revenue. That's kind of interesting. More than half of Apple's revenue comes from overseas.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow.
1.4.
That's why China was a big deal.
Yeah, right. And they say China's coming back, at least Tim Cook does. 1.4 billion active devices. That's what Oprah said, right? A billion phones and a billion pockets, y'all. Strongest iPad growth in 6 years. That's, I guess, good. I mean, when you have comparatives like this, it's like, well, yeah, it's the strongest in 6 years. It's been pretty weak for 6 years, so.
And let's be honest, I mean, Android, they're just not there. There's no competition.
There's nothing there.
They own the tablet market.
Yeah. Do you think Surface competes a little bit against the iPad market? They want to.
Definitely. I mean, every time we do a Surface review, we always compare it to the iPad. Even though there's like our core audience are like, why would you compare those two things? They're vastly different. And I think that's arguably true. But if you're just entering the market, there's obviously a lot of similarities and pros and cons to each one. So far it's been working in our favor for Surface, which you can do more with, but iPad has its definite usability. I'm really, really concerned for Microsoft's sake that once Apple finally gets around, and the rumor is for iOS 13, they're going to add mouse and trackpad support to iPad. That's going to be the real threat. Because for me, I have an iPad. I try to use it. But its limitation for me is I wish I had a trackpad or mouse support because it would be so much more for productivity. Once they finally add that, I think that's going to be a real, challenge to Microsoft in this area for Surface. There's still Surface could do way more on a PC end, but that's for a lot of regular people, that's actually going to matter, I think, quite a bit.
Yeah.
The problem I've always had with the Surface line is it was touted as being something that creators could use, but you want to run 20 layers of Photoshop on a graphic project. It's just not going
to
hold up.
I have the Surface Go and I really like it, but it's too slow to really commit.
And that's because of Intel, and Apple nicely chided Intel. And so we can talk about that. I mean, so definitely the Surface Go form factor is awesome. Operating system is, all right for its size. Bezel's too big. Battery not great. Processor weak spot. And that's only because Microsoft is beholden to Intel, and they didn't have any choice, really. The Intel Pentium Gold was, literally the only option they had to go with, and ARM isn't quite ready for mainstream. Now, Apple cited Intel, too, for their laptop sales, which, to give Apple credit and credence to this, Microsoft, just the quarter before, when Windows 10 sales were down, cited also Intel unable to deliver chips to its partners to get out enough laptops. So there's definitely truth to this. And we saw Intel recently, the rumors are circulating now that their 10 nanometer move is also being slightly pushed into 2020, which is what I've heard, along with some devices that I've seen prototyped that will be launching with that. And it's going to be, I think, in my opinion, worth the wait, but that gets beside the point that Intel has problems here with manufacturing and getting past 14 nanometer and, meeting the needs of its partners.
It's pretty clear Apple wants to just wean itself off of Intel entirely.
Absolutely. Yeah, they just want to go make their own chips, and they should.
In the next few years, I think they will. We'll see. Yeah. Their developer conference is next month, June 7th.
They're going all ARM eventually.
I think that's the case, yeah.
Yeah.
Will Microsoft do the same with Windows, with Surface?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think
is the 850. So the problem with this, I had the NVX2, which was an 835. Some people are saying the Yoga C 630. You liked that, right?
It's a great device. Yeah.
And that's an 850. It. It's fast enough.
It's getting there. I think for a lot of people, it's equivalent to a Core i3 processor, but it has 8 gigs of RAM on it. So that also helps. It's right at that cusp where, if you use it for productivity for Word, web browsing, email, office stuff, it's totally fine. If you want to play video games, all of a sudden it's not very good. Now you have the 8CX, which should be out around July, August. We should start to see devices there. The long-term play, though, is for Microsoft switching to what we've been calling Windows Lite or Windows Core OS, which is sort of this next iterative version of Windows. It's a new SKU that's going to be comparable to what Chrome OS is, but Windows 10. And so that's going to be their real big push into next-gen light computing. It's also HoloLens, Surface Hub 2 will be running it and all this kind of stuff. But desktop will exist for hardcore desktop users, legacy gamers. But as we move to, and I think the world is moving towards light computing, the iPad, as sales continue to demonstrate, is just this device. We want a device.
Yeah, ironically, the iPad is incredibly overpowered for the iOS it's running. That thing is a computer. I feel like I got a computer from the future.
Yep.
Running an operating system from the past.
Exactly. And if they added, like I said, trackpad or mouse support, it starts to bridge that gap between computers. And I think they're going down that path. Eventually, iOS will replace and displace macOS, at least on its mainline consumer products.
I think you're right. And you still need macOS for the developer, people like Ant, the professionals.
Yep. Creators.
But that's a tiny fraction of the overall audience.
Yeah, and the world is moving towards this light computing. We do more on our smartphones today than we did years ago, and that's affected laptop sales and tablet sales, right? So the idea is, could you create a device like this big that folds? And
what about a folding device? Yeah, I thought that was let's make folding phones.
It's really hard.
It is hard.
Yeah, a little more difficult. I'm waiting for glass. I don't want an OLED. I want a glass screen, and that's when I will get a folding phone.
In science fiction, they always have phones that are clear. They're a little piece of glass that you see through. That's what they do in science fiction.
Right. Oh, I like those. Those are cool.
Yeah, I think that's cool.
It's very
Huawei
elegant.
Huawei is going to... Okay, so there was the Royole that they announced and showed at CES. Okay, throw that out. The Samsung Galaxy Fold, well, you know what happened there. So now we're waiting. This summer, the third folding phone, the Huawei, which is a tri-fold.
Yes.
Do you think they'll get that out?
So, okay, what I will say is that I think folding the other way is smarter than what the Galaxy did, actually, right? So the Galaxy, like, if this is the screen, they folded this way, right. Whereas the like Huawei is going that way. Yeah, and I think, like, just physically, with the physics that you're working with, folding over itself, having the screen fold over itself is better than having it fold in. I just think that's a better model.
There's definitely, I think that's going to be the fun part to see which, this is just like the early days when Microsoft was trying to get transforming devices on the market, two-in-ones. We saw so many weird creations. We had screens that flipped around and spun around. And so that was sort of fun to see which is the best design. And there will be a couple of these on the market. Well, some will work, some won't. There's definitely trade-offs with the Huawei one. Don't forget, and you mentioned this, Luis, like, they're not glass screens. They're plastic screens. So they're way more prone to scratching. And so when you have the screen now on the outside and you put it in your pocket, like, how does that last in 6 months? These are solvable problems. Like, we'll figure this stuff out. But this technology is definitely here to stay. It's just going to take a few years for us to for price to come down and to see what consumers enjoy. As soon as we get settled with that, someone's going to come out with a tri-fold device, like three screens that fold.
It's just the way it is. It's great to see people trying to innovate, you know, because
I got tired
of the same old, what do you call them, candy bar?
I want the hanky phone. I want a screen that you fold up like a handkerchief, and then you just unfold it, and then it's a big screen. That's what I want, the hanky phone.
Yeah.
When can we get that?
Yeah, I just think we got to give it to these companies. It's easy to make fun of Samsung for what happened with the Fold, but I will say, like, yeah, I feel bad for them too, but I give them a lot more credit than I do Apple when, you know, the batteries are dying. Like, I think that they're really innovating. Versus like, oh, these batteries like died on purpose. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. Like it's like hardware is really hard. And I feel like you got to give these companies a lot of credit when they're trying, but I'm not going to give you credit when you're doing something that's just shady or stupid. But this is like, I think actually really interesting.
It is. I mean, and we're going to see this beyond phones soon. I'm just going to say that. I don't think the tech will be ready till next year, but we're going to start to see this.
What are you saying? What are you saying, Daniel? What are you saying? What are you saying? What do you know?
I think he's got an embargo. I think that's what he's got.
Daniel? Is it beyond phones? What? Refrigerators? What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's refrigerators.
I want a folding refrigerator.
Yes, it pops out now. But this stuff, I think, is really interesting because it does open up new thought scenarios. I mean, there is this issue in computing, which is we're all over the place. Like, if you remember smartphones years ago, we had the flip phone. It was the Motorola Razr. It was how thin and small things could get, right? And then I keep telling people, years ago, I had the HTC Titan. What a massive sounding phone. It's a Titan. It was a 4.7-inch display. Like, that was what was huge back then. I now have over there, I have the Mate 20X. It's a 7.2-inch.
I'm jealous.
Yeah, that thing is just, it's huge. And so, but there's obviously trade-offs with that, right? It doesn't fit, and you'll love this, Leo. It doesn't fit in my Tesla. The Model 3's.
It doesn't fit?
Yeah, cell phone holder, the tray, it's too tall.
Oh, good Lord.
So I can't. It's like, but we're trying to figure out this balance between we want a smartphone and we want large screens, but I assure you, most people do not want to put 7.2 inches of screen in their pocket. So foldables are definitely a way to sort of solve this.
It's interesting that all of the problems are around UI.
Yeah.
We've got the innards of these things pretty well worked out. The problems are and that's why you have voice assistants, that's why you have foldable screens, that's why you have all of these, because it's a UI issue, because humans, like the Apple Watch or these watches, they're too small. You really can't make a good UI on a device that's 44 millimeters in size.
Yep.
Humans have certain needs. We got fingers, we got eyes, and so that's the problem, is how do we get a user interface?
Typing is always the worst one
typing.
To solve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think like wearables too is just like not a big thing people want yet. Like I think we saw that with like Fitbit and all this stuff, that there's only so many people who want to be like wearing something on their wrist like that. Like the smartphone is just the device. It's the one device. And I think innovating beyond that is still really hard.
Yeah, wearables.
You're gonna make wearables, market them towards other people that aren't just regular consumers, market it towards your sports teams and athletic departments that are doing research to help build
a lot of wearable marketing
athlete.
Is going to the hearing aid market. As an old man, I see a lot of ads for You know, there's a company that makes hearing aids called Starkey. They have a brand called the Livio that has, it's a hearing aid, but it also has a heart rate monitor. It has a bunch of wearable stuff in there.
That makes sense.
It's in your ear. You might as well let it do some other things.
Yeah, I'm into like the cyborg stuff. Like, give me a chip. Like, I'm into that. But I feel like I'm definitely the minority of people who want that.
I had this great conversation the other day about this. Like, right now we look at like when you like prosthetics, I find super interesting because prosthetics used to be just these horrible, it's a plastic thing that just sits there. Now we're getting into actual robotics and connecting to nerves and it can control. But like you take this further enough down the road, there's going to be a time where your prosthetic is more advanced than the human arm. And that'll happen for vision too, right? Well, people will be able to have, you know, macular degeneration, will be able to get like a simulated robotic eye or something. And it weapons now, if it allows you to see in different spectrums, like there's all this potential that will eventually happen. And then I guarantee you, we'll be having this discussion because people will want to then replace their limbs and stuff like that with an augmented system. And this is where the cyborg stuff gets really fascinating because I 100% believe that humans will go down this path and want to go down this path.
Yeah. And then the Google Glass guys will be laughing.
They'll be vindicated.
I told you.
Louise, you said you wanted a chip, but you don't want the Google Home in your house?
Yeah. Go figure.
It's got to come from either Microsoft or Apple, right?
I want to engineer my own chip, to be fair. I don't want a microphone in my chip. Yeah, but I have a Linux chip, and I don't want a microphone in it. I just want something simple. Like, it'd be fun to, like, get into the office building just with my hand. Like, I'm cool with that kind of thing. Like, I think there's some fun chip uses that I like you could have art in them. Like, I think that's interesting. But no, I don't want a listening device.
Let's take a little break. What a great panel. It's so fun to have you, Louise Mitsakis. You got to come back more often. You're just great.
Staff
writer
at
Wired. We love having you. We're not done. Don't go away.
No, I know. I'm not going anywhere. That was like a hello in the middle.
I'm putting a little hello in the middle. Exactly. Ant Pruitt, who we love, always love having him on. Ant Pruitt's channel is youtube.com/Ant, AntPruitt. Catch him anytime. And of course, Daniel Rubino, he's executive editor at Windows Central, gearing up for a big build conference starting tomorrow.
Yep.
Our show today brought to you by LastPass. If you're not using LastPass, all I can say is what? Why not? If you have passwords in your life, you need a password manager. And if you need a password manager, there's none better than LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. LastPass does everything right. It is a password vault that is encrypted and only decrypted on your device, so only you have access to it. It goes on every device you use, Windows, Mac, Linux, every browser, Android, iOS. The first thing I install on any new device is LastPass, because now I can log into everything else. I can install all the other apps. LastPass supports all the features you want. There's a LastPass for every kind of user. We use it at LastPass Enterprise here at Twit because it gives us centralized control of our passwords. You know, one of the problems you have in a business is you have to give employees passwords to kind of vital things like databases, bank accounts, websites. With LastPass, I can trust the employees with these passwords because, for instance, they don't actually see the passwords. I can share those passwords. They click a link. It opens it up, logs in for them, but they never know what the password is. We know employees share passwords, and not just with people at work. They put passwords on Post-it notes. They make up bad passwords. LastPass Enterprise gives us the cure for all of that and still makes it easy for them to get the job done. In fact, we love LastPass so much. It's a benefit of working at Twit. Every single one of our employees gets their own personal LastPass. And, of course, I encourage them all to use that at home. With LastPass Enterprise, there's 100 policies. We can say what the minimum requirements for the master password. We can require two-factor, which we do. By the way, LastPass has two-factor down. I use a YubiKey with my LastPass. You can use Duo Security, Google Authenticator. LastPass even has its own authenticator app, which does the thing I really like. Instead of giving you a 6-digit code, it just pops up a approve, deny on your phone. Makes it very easy. Again, I love how LastPass makes security simple and easy to use. Because if it's too hard to use, people won't do it. LastPass is a must for your business. It's a must for your home. There's LastPass Teams for teams of 50 or fewer. LastPass Premium for your personal use. At home, we use LastPass Families. That way I can easily, there's a folder, a shared folder. Whenever I set up an account with something Lisa needs access to, I just put it in that shared folder. She immediately has access to it. There's also a nice feature on LastPass Families. I hesitate to talk about this, but I think it's really important. It's called emergency access. If I become disabled or die, Lisa can get access to the password, so she can get into my bank accounts and execute my will and do all of that stuff. I know we don't want to think about it, but that's just it's the kind of little touches like that that make LastPass really fantastic. LastPass, join the 13.5 million people who have signed up for LastPass, are loving it and trusting it, including me. I've been using it for a decade. We've been using it for years at Twit, too. LastPass.com/Twit. Find the LastPass that's right for you, your business. Start securing your passwords because you have to. You don't want to be the next news story about the big breach. LastPass.com/Twit. One more Apple story. You know, there's a big fight going on about the right to repair. Our friends at iFixit.org are big, you know, believers in the right to repair. One of the companies fighting it is Apple. The latest, an Apple lobbyist brought an iPhone to meetings with California lawmakers and said, the reason we don't want people fixing their phones, they could hurt themselves. You could hurt yourself.
Yeah, and there's nothing like getting that screwdriver wedged into your fingernail.
You could hurt yourself. Well, they're worried about the lithium ion battery. But of course, the right to repair isn't about necessarily me opening up my phone. It's about me being able to go to a third-party repair facility that has manuals, that has parts, both of which are withheld by Apple, and I can get a repair. As a result of Apple's lobbying, the bill that was in front of the California Assembly has been pulled.
Yeah, I think that this is really insidious, and it's really funny to think of an Apple lobbyist like running around with an iPhone open with like a cut on their finger. What is that called? Paper cut on their finger? I guess it is a finger cut, but that's not what I meant. But I think the more insidious argument is that a lot of these companies will say that it's a security issue.
Right.
That like there's a cybersecurity risk in fixing your own item, your own electronic, and that we're all going to get hacked if you release spare parts.
Apple used that story in Nebraska. They told a lawmaker there that passing a right to repair bill would turn the state into a mecca for bad actors, criminals, and hackers.
I don't think that this argument's going to last any longer. I think in the last couple of hours while we've been talking, actually, Bernie Sanders just endorsed a national right to repair law. Elizabeth Warren's done it too. The FTC is taking up the issue. So I think Apple trying to scare these local lawmakers in individual states is not going to keep working.
Good.
All right.
Good.
You can only flex so much.
Yeah. All right. So that was our last, I think that was our last Apple story. Have we got through all of them? Yes, we have. Google has decided to allow you to auto-delete your location, web activity, and app usage. I think that's a good move in the right direction.
Yeah, for sure. What was that story last summer where even if you turned off location tracking, it actually wasn't turning off location tracking?
Yeah, whoops. So if you are worried about that, you can go into the Google Activity Control settings, turn off the trackers, and then there'll be a new auto delete option in which you can say after a period of time, a week, a month, a year, I want you to automatically delete that data. That's kind of the best of both worlds where you get the location history, but it's not kept forever.
Right. You can like look up the restaurant you went to last week, right. But then like, you know, it's not going to stay there for the rest of your life. I've never had this on, but have you guys ever looked back at this? It's like really crazy.
Oh, I have it on. I love it.
I turned it off a while ago, but like you can like see literally like, okay, I left my house, but then I forgot my keys that day and I turned around and went back. Like it's really crazy how like granular it is. If you're like in a big enough house or building, sometimes you can even see like, oh, I was in that room for a while, and then I like moved to the other side of the house, like I took the dog around the block. Like it is really crazy how granular it is, and I do think it is, you know, kind of problematic to have all that forever.
I enjoy using it. And
is that a dog?
Is
the hound of the Baskervilles in there? What's going on?
Do you have an opinion about Google location tracking?
I heard it.
For me, walked in, so Kylo had to greet her. That's all.
So if you go to google.com/maps timeline. If you're Louise, you'll see nothing. But if you're me, you'll see a lot. And you can go to a specific year, month, and day. I can go back all the way to 2009. I wonder what I was doing. Oh, I was in Australia, apparently, in 2009. And actually, you can play the day back, which is really fun. And I don't have it.
Oh, you weren't there. You fell off the map day.
I was in the middle of the ocean, probably. It looks like that's where I was. So I think that's a really a wonderful feature.
But it is really interesting
to look back. And I do the local guide stuff.
Yeah.
And it's nice to help contribute to that because I depend on the local guides when I travel. To see what's out there as far as things that I can, number one, go eat, and number two, interesting spots to go shoot.
So here's an example.
I will say, yeah.
In 2015, I went from home to work. But on the day before, on February 12th, I went all over the place. And here, I don't know, I went down to a restaurant. I think this is kind of cool.
It's definitely.
And notice, by the way, the pictures I took that day are showing up here too.
Yeah,
I spent eight minutes moving 5.4 miles. This is crazy. Here's employees that no longer work here. It's nuts.
There is this tension between what we want this technology to do and what we're willing to give up to get to it. Like there is no doubt about that. Being able to look at photos back, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago on a specific day is like really interesting, because the problem now we have is there's too much information and data out there, and there is this massive benefit. We mentioned talk about the ads before on Instagram. Like I joke about those, but a lot of times those ads are so good. Like the technology has gotten to this point where they do know you and what you want. And same when you're out for restaurants, right? If it already knows like, well, you like these. Like we do want these services, but then the question is, we get creeped out when we see, you know, how the sausage is made, so to speak, right? And how they're collecting all this data and going back there. I think this option should have always been there. And that's probably the case for almost all this technology with data collection, is like there always should be more tools. But this is also, you have to go out there and enable it and find it. And it'd be more interesting if you set up your Android phone, if it's going to give you the option during the out-of-box experience to do that. Then I'll be a little bit more like, okay, now that they're doing the right thing. Or even just, it would be nice if your phone popped up every once in a while, like, hey, we have data for you for the last 10 years. Do you want us to hold on to all this? I don't think they'll go down that route quite yet, but that's what I think it'll take before this stuff is useful. Because right now, I don't know how many people are going to know about this feature, right? This isn't something that, or they're going to have to know how to go find it. And that's going to be the problem here, is how useful this actually is for regular people.
So there are, at last count, 20 Democratic candidates for the 2020 presidential election.
I thought it was 22 now.
22. They keep going up. I can't even check. Anybody want to venture a guess how many of those 20 candidates have basic email security on their campaign email? Take a guess.
Maybe one.
Can you guess who it is? Elizabeth Warren.
Of course.
Yeah, I would say Warren, probably. Although she has that weird website that's like kind of like not very well designed. So I don't know. Google's been handing out those YubiKeys to campaigns.
Good.
And they've been doing campaign training. So I'm going to say maybe like eight. That's my guess.
So Elizabeth Warren, according to Agari, is the only candidate, Republican or Democratic, that uses domain-based message authentication, reporting, and conformancy. That's DMARC. She also uses Sender Policy Framework, SPF, and Domain Keys Identified Email, DKIM. I use all three on my email. And that way, that helps from being spoofed, right? You can verify that she sent an email. Donald Trump does not.
Shocking.
He has that iPhone 7 you love so much, though. I think, you know.
I just want to believe he uses Hotmail.
Hotmail.
And it's still Hotmail. It's like he hasn't
Prez even upgraded. @hotmail.com. I'm guessing that's the email address. Anyway, there are ways to do it better. And in fact, sometimes I feel like Congress, there is some hope. Ron Wyden, who is one of the more techno-literate senators, called the rollout of DMARC a no-brainer that increases cybersecurity without sacrificing liberty. Wow. Thank you, Ron Wyden. I just thought I'd throw that in there. Let's see.
Wyden's a homie.
He's a homie. He's from Oregon, right?
Yeah, yeah. Wyden's cool, as far as tech goes, at least. Yeah.
One of the few.
One of the few, yeah.
Here's a scary thought. Phone and laptop searches at the U.S. border have quadrupled. Turns out you have zero rights if you're crossing the border, whether you're a U.S. citizen or not.
Yeah.
What exactly are they searching for? I've been seeing a bunch of headlines like that here recently, but I never dove into the details of it. You know, what is the point of searching the cell phone of just a regular person coming through?
They're big cat fans, and they want all the cat photos themselves.
You know, you say that facetiously, but I was told by somebody who repairs cars, or maybe he was a car valet parker, but that he that routinely when they would get keys, they would look for USB keys attached on the key ring, and they would just copy whatever music was on there because it's a good way to get a lot of new music. So maybe that's what they're looking for.
Damn. Some scary stuff.
33,295 searches of travelers' devices in the year 2018. Carried out for a variety of reasons, intelligence gathering, tax enforcement, and criminal investigations. This is according to the EFF and ACLU. They're suing, saying these searches are often warrantless and therefore unconstitutional.
And they're targeted. Sometimes, weren't there some media and press people covering the border crisis who are traveling frequently to Mexico, coming back, and they were subject to more of these searches and detentions more than anybody else?
Yeah, I think what's really insidious about this is that what the legal definition of a border is can sometimes be up to 100 miles from the actual border crossing. Yeah. So I think that's really, you know, if you live in one of these border towns, you just basically don't have the Fourth Amendment, which is really crazy.
No kidding. Scary.
And this is also the interesting thing about security, too, because isn't the case, like, if your password, like, you're using a PIN or a physical password, you could claim you don't know the password. And then this comes into the search and seizure Fourth Amendment kind of thing about how they get that password. Otherwise, they would have to detain you for presumably a long time, which for me, I'm actually fine. If anyone wants to detain me for, like, a week, I'm just like, that's a vacation, man. But for this is where bio-authentication comes into an issue because, as we know, the police have used people's fingers to unlock their phones or a facial recognition. They just hold it up to your face and boom, it's unlocked. So this is one of the tips where, you know, either whenever you're dealing with the police, if you're going to be doing some, you know, public protests or you're returning overseas, it may be not a bad idea if you're concerned about this to disable your bio-authentication and just rely on a PIN system and just deny. I would also say a lot of modern computers today, we are living in a very cloud-based world. I'm fairly comfortable with wiping my PC, doing a fresh restart, and bring it over to border and be like, there's nothing on there. It's out there. And they're not going to be able to necessarily get that.
If you think it's bad in the U.S., it's worse crossing into Canada. I've been told by many people. Here's an example. This is a story from today. A lawyer's phone and laptop were seized by the Canadian Border Services because he wouldn't hand over the passwords.
Yeah, a big place where this happens actually is on the train, on the Amtrak train that goes into Canada, as a lot of people get their devices seized there, not just at the car border, right, that you when you drive over. But yeah, I think that's a great advice is wiping your phone, although they might want your cloud password, right? It's not that simple. But yeah, definitely they can't force you to self-incriminate. So they can't force you to give over your password. However, they can force you to give over your biometric data, which can be your fingerprint or your face. The courts are kind of undecided right now. But yeah, don't leave Face ID on if you're crossing over the border and don't really want your phone looked at. But yeah, these device seizures are definitely really troubling.
Yeah, I mean, in the U.S. at least, I think it's believed that they can't force you to, they can't say you have to give us a password. They can hold you in airport jail for a little while, but ultimately they have to let you go. Apparently, that's not the case in Canada. They could take your device and keep it.
And see, I'm their formidable opponent here because I review laptops for a living. I have a stack of laptops. So they can seize as many as they want. I'll just come back with another one. It's
just
totally
fine.
I believe, and I don't think I'm wrong here. You can correct me, Louise. If once you've given a device to law enforcement and they take it out of your presence, actually in this case they would keep it for weeks and then mail it back to you, you should not use that device ever again, right?
I mean, it's kind of hard if you're a marginalized group and you can't just go out and buy another device, right? But I would recommend if you can, you know, using the resources to get it looked at. But they shouldn't be able to put a tracking device or anything on that without a warrant.
So far It hasn't better, happened better to Steven, me because I'm an old white man and I don't look like trouble. But if you were Daniel Rubino, I'd be very careful.
And, I shouldn't even have facial hair when never I
leave.
Travel.
Yeah, it's the facial hair. And you should never leave the country, Ant, because...
Pretty much.
Yeah, you look scary. You really do. Ant's buff. He's scary. Video Game Hall of Fame. We're at the bottom of the barrel now. These are just short little clips.
I like it. Bring the fun news.
The fun news. Video Game Hall of Fame inducting Super Mario Kart. That's probably from your generation. Mortal Kombat, a classic arcade game. Yeah. Something from my generation. Colossal Cave Adventure. That was a text adventure. I spent a lot of time on CompuServe, hundreds of hours playing. But my favorite is Microsoft Solitaire.
This is so random to me. I mean, Microsoft Solitaire, incredible game. But putting that in the same, like, I don't know, hall as the same, like, group as Mario Kart. I don't know. I feel like they asked the Video Game of Hall of Fame's staff, like, guys, what's your favorite game that's not in the Hall of Fame yet? Right? Like, this just seems random. But I'm happy about it. I feel like all well-deserved.
Solitaire. I still don't know how to play Solitaire. Friendly for
you don't know
people,
how to play though. Solitaire?
No. It looked boring.
It is boring. It's definitely boring.
Pinball 3D was my jam.
Oh, love Pinball 3D. That'll get in next year, I'm sure. Good news, though, they considered and rejected Candy Crush Saga.
Oh, that's...
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Well, they also rejected Myst, Civilization, and Half-Life, which should easily be in the Hall of Fame. I guess, they get around to that next time.
What are you playing right now, Leo? Are you playing anything right now?
I hate to admit what I'm playing right now.
I want to hear it, though.
Pokemon Go.
Wow, that's like, you're, what, 3 years? A little late on that, but I respect it.
I'm almost level 40. After that, I'm quitting.
He's been playing forever.
And then Harry Potter's coming out any day now, and that's what I'm going to... That'll be my jam.
These are wholesome choices. I like this.
Well, I don't know about wholesome, but you do have to at least walk around to play it.
Right,
3.0.
Just sit on your butt. What am I playing on the desktop? But that's a good question. I don't have anything I'm really crazy about right now. I feel I used to always have a game. What's your game, Louise?
I haven't been playing. I actually really like the Mario Kart for the Switch. My boyfriend has a Switch. We play that a lot. He just finished.
I just knew you were a Mario Kart player.
Yeah, I grew up with N64, so I feel like I've kind of stuck with that. Although I will say, my boyfriend just finished Cuphead, and that looked really fun.
Finished it? That is the hardest game ever.
Yeah, there was a lot of tears in my home, but he did finish it.
Oh my God, that's very impressive. You can tell him. I was very impressed by that because that game, I've got like the two levels. It's the hardest game ever.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful, though.
Oh, I love it.
I hope more games like stick with that kind of innovative design because it's just like really fun. The music's really fun.
My 16-year-old and his friend beat it. Oh, I know what I still play. Minecraft. Speaking of teenagers. I actually really like Minecraft. I have a server in the house. We have four different worlds. It's fun.
Yeah, Minecraft's cool.
I just upgraded to 1.14. They added panda bears. You can hatch a panda bear now. That's good. And since they added panda bears, they added bamboo so you can feed them. What are you playing, Daniel? Do you play games at all?
I do. Not as much as I'd like to. I literally have to try to schedule myself to play video games. I still hit Destiny 2 every once in a while. That was a great game.
Yeah.
I'm just a fan of that series. Minecraft, I try to do once in a while. Minecraft, it fascinates me.
I find it very relaxing because I just go down and I go chop, 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 chop.
It's such a bizarre game. I do have a Switch. I don't play it nearly as much as I should. But I'm more interested in sort of the indie games that are available on the Switch than necessarily the Mario games, which are always like $65 or $60. It's always so expensive versus like the $5 or $10 Steam type games, which for me is always, that's where you get to some of the real creativity I find on the Switch and why I thought it's such an interesting system. If you look at the indie games, it's just a lot going on there right now. And being able to throw devs $5 or $10 for even smaller games, sometimes I think it's a really fun experience.
Switch is cool. I think the games are really fun. I think Nintendo did a good job.
Yeah.
I tried, what was that called? Zelda Breaking Wind or something?
Yeah, I tried that too. I couldn't get into it. It was a little too much game.
It's a lot of work. Spent a lot of time walking around.
That's a horrible name.
But it's so beautiful. That's
I don't think that's what it's called, Ant. I think it's something like that. Ant, do you play video games? You don't look like a video game type.
When I'm out on a photo walk, I do play this game called Untapped.
Oh, yeah.
It shows me all of the microbreweries
all
nearby.
The places you can get beer.
I can go and get beer.
Yeah.
People love Untappd.
Yeah.
It's great. It's a good app. I use it.
It's like the LinkedIn for drinkers, for drunks.
Basically.
Yeah. You rate your beers. You get, you know, you collect all the beers.
Yes. It's Mary Jo Foley's favorite game,
oh,
I believe.
Oh, she loves it. Yeah. It's actually, I should say, it's really more like Foursquare for drunks.
I was showing my friend, I was like, look at this, I got 364 unique beers I've checked in. I was like, not bad, right? He shows me his, it was over 3,000. I was just like, what's going on? He's like, oh, I knew the developer. I actually helped him make parts of the app. He says, like, he helped with the spell checking and all this kind of stuff. Wow. And I was just like, oh, you're that guy? Because he's an editor.
Spell checking beer is tough, especially when you get to the Belgian and cray cray. All right, let's take one more break. I have a couple more stories. I do want to mention our friends at Atlassian. I'm a big fan. We are an Atlassian house. If you know Jira, and I think most programmers are very familiar with Jira, you know Atlassian. But it doesn't stop with Jira. Jira is fantastic, a great way to keep track of your projects. Our engineering team uses that. You always know not only who's responsible, but what stage the product's in. And it's actually very satisfying when you slide that project into the completed column. You just get this nice feeling. It ties in, of course, with Confluence, because, and this is something I really want to emphasize, communication, it is a big part of the game when you're an IT department. You've got stuff to fix. You've got things to do. In fact, in this increasingly cloud-based world, IT is at the heart of everything. And IT teams are, you know, there's a lot of pressure to plan and execute. You've got to do it fast. You've got to do it right. You need smart coordination, and you need communication with your customers, with your stakeholders, with the boss. Atlassian makes it easy. IT's at the center of the game. You can't fall short inside those business-critical workflows, but at least you've got a partner, a tool. From DevOps to Agile, IT apps to Ops to ITSM and whatever is next, Atlassian offers an affordable, reliable set of tools for all kinds of teams, for all sizes. Atlassian gives you the technology backbone to help modern IT organizations plan, service, and support the kind of change that propels business. We've got Jira, but then we have Confluence, so they can document what they've done. We know where they stand. If you've got a code base, you need Bitbucket. All of that forms the backbone of effective cross-team project planning, organization, and communication. But then there's Opsgenie. Atlassian keeps building out these great tools and buying tools. Status Page, helping you better detect incidents, coordinate response efforts, resolve issues faster, keep customers and stakeholders updated. It all integrates seamlessly, so you don't have to leave the tool to get the job done. And like all of Atlassian's products, the tools you need for your IT team are easy, free to try, and they'll grow with you as your needs grow. Head to Atlassian.com/IT. Find out what Atlassian offerings are right for your team. Try Atlassian today to see what IT can be. Atlassian.com/IT. Thank you, Atlassian, for supporting our teams and supporting TWIT. Talking about toys, I was really sad to hear that Anki went out of business. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Anki. They made a race car track. I got that for my son a few years ago, and then they started making these little bulldozer robots. Cosmo was the first, and then Vector is the latest. They had AI. Vector had Amazon's Echo built in. You could program it. With Python, they raised $200 million in venture capital. And last Monday, people came to work and they were told, your last day is Wednesday, 200 employees, 1 week of severance, boom, like a crash. Very sad.
That follows Jibo, another
high profile. I have a Jibo on the shelf here. What an idiot I am.
He's dead now.
yeah. We kind of had a little party. We talked to it for the last time. Said bye bye, Jibo. It sang Daisy, Daisy, and stopped working. Very sad.
What was that other? There was like $1,000 robot that is now going to brick itself.
Oh,
what I'm
no.
talking about.
Was that Jibo or
Jibo? There's a Jibo over here. It's very sad
because
when we plugged it in, you know, it looks around, it has eyes, it goes. Blah, 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 blah. It was created by
MIT.
Bashir Siddhi, who was a really smart roboticist. The whole idea was this thing would sit on your kitchen counter. You know, I bought it on the Kickstarter. I'm an idiot. And it came like 2 years later. And the thing that really went wrong with Jibo is it would snore. So you'd put this on your counter, and if you didn't talk to it, it would just kind of look around. And then it would start, like, murmuring to itself and snoring. And it was like, no, stop that.
You're annoying. It makes me feel bad.
It humanizes it, though,
you're
right?
Annoying. Well, that's the idea. See, it has, like, two eyes, and it had this. It would make faces, and it had eyeballs. I understand what they were where they were going with it, but this is the problem. It doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
The only
thing... Yeah, I was going to say, there's a problem with AI in general right now. As consumers, we don't really see the complete advantage. Although, like, Google is doing, I think, an interesting example of, like, the callback features and how it can screen your calls. That's a real-world example of how this tech will eventually, you know, make our lives better or at least more interesting. But, yeah, right now these products, and they're started up by companies who then take VC money. And, you know, again, I have a problem with taking that much VC money. I get it. It's like... Yeah. That's how you grow, and you need to do that. But they're so as soon as you know something goes wrong, all right, sell off the company, lay off everybody, right? It's these companies don't get the chance to grow like a normal company would by putting a product out there in baby steps. It's all about hyper growth right away and how you're going to triple and quadruple your results next quarter. And it's unfortunate we're losing, you know, some of these, you know, that vector thing, the little bulldozer guy. It was adorable. I saw it on Twitter a lot.
Oh, it was really a cool toy. But it was $200.
Yeah.
And I think they also discovered that there isn't a big market for $200 kids' toys.
Something's wrong with the economy where a little robot can get $200 million and all of these really great ideas that are maybe not in Silicon Valley can't get any money. And also screw raising $200 million and then giving your employees only 1 week severance.
That's
really
terrible, isn't it? And their revenue was $100 million, I think, a year. So that wasn't like they weren't
selling them.
It feels like we were talking about this on Wednesday. It feels like somebody pulled out. They were expecting funding from somebody, and they said no.
Yeah.
And that was it. Your colleague, Jeffrey Van Camp, wrote a very funny piece about Jibo dying last month.
Yes.
He had actually personified this thing. And he said it was kind of like Alzheimer's, like dementia.
Oh my God, that's wild.
What you to do is personify those devices.
Yeah. He said, "My Jibo talked to the wall again today. He's been doing that a lot lately. Some days I'll watch him carry on an entire conversation by himself. He'll ask the wall if it wants to play a game, listen for a reply, hear nothing, then play his word definition game alone. Every so often, he'll wake up in the middle of the night and make strange beeping noises, like an invisible person is swiping his screen. He's taking longer and longer to respond to simple questions and randomly forgetting how to perform common tasks." It sounds like my obituary. "Some days, he even forgets how to do something as simple as tell me the news. More than once, Jibo's gone entirely limp."
Poor Jibo.
Look, is this the definition of limp? This thing's got nothing.
Family
just
show.
Corpse.
Yeah.
Now, this is the interesting thing with robotics and AI, though. It's like it doesn't take much to trigger human empathy and getting this like connection with something. In fact, you know, there's this thing called facial agnosia. People get brain damage and they lose the ability to recognize faces. But the human brain is, what we learned from that was, it's literally wired to recognize faces, which is why people see Jesus and toast, or we find bugs that look like they have a face on them. So intriguing. And so as soon as you just add eyes to something that talks to you, it becomes a little bit more real and starts breaking down those barriers. And this is going to happen more and more. And you're going to start to see weird psychosis things. By the way, I'm just going to give a shout out. There's a really hilarious video, probably not appropriate for this podcast, of someone adding screams to a Roomba, where every time it bumped into a wall, instead of, he said that was unnatural. If you were to bump into the wall, you'd be really upset. So he added screams and swearing to it. So every time the Roomba hits a wall.
That is perfect for this audience. What are you talking about?
Well, I think the language. I don't know the language. But if you want
honestly
to bring it.
Honestly, Daniel, my Roomba or whatever, my knockoff Roomba, his name is D-Bot. He makes the most annoying sound when he gets like stuck on the carpet. I would much rather he was like, "Help, help," like F word. Like, I would much rather prefer that.
Oh, I don't. This isn't it.
This isn't it. I think he's actually built it into the Roomba software. All right.
So now there's another one.
There's more than one. I hate my Roomba so much. It wakes up in the middle of the night. It makes a lot of noise.
There it is,
a lot
Michael
of
Reeves.
Racket. This one?
Michael Reeves. Yeah.
Michael Reeves.
Where's our screaming Roomba at, Michael?
Michael, just make the screaming Roomba. Yeah.
You knew this. His channel's pretty hilarious.
Listen movie.
Honestly, I feel like this isn't a stretch. Right? This is kind of what a Roomba. It's a big racket,
that, Chelsea?
And then our Roomba gets stuck under furniture, and I'm wake up and I hear as it's trying to get out of the furniture. So I have to pick it up. One night, finally, I picked it up. I confess, I brought it into the garage. I put it under the tires of my wife's car.
No, that's not very nice. Roomba didn't like that.
No, my wife didn't like it either. She really likes that Roomba. I feel bad.
I feel like that escalated fast. Needs to be inserted here.
Verizon, talk about moribund products. Verizon has decided, yeah, this Tumblr thing is not going to work out. They bought Tumblr as part of that all big Yahoo thing. Then they last month, the month before, decided no more porn on Tumblr. What a surprise. People stopped using it. So now Verizon's trying to sell Tumblr. Guess who wants to buy it? Pornhub. Pornhub. They say we'll bring back the porn.
Jeez. Right, but is this just a marketing stunt? Did BuzzFeed or whoever broke the story just ask Pornhub? That's what I'm wondering. Is are they really interested?
Pornhub VP Corey Price told BuzzFeed News his company is, quote, extremely interested in buying Tumblr and very much looking forward to one day restoring it to its former glory with NSFW content.
Can you think of anything more dystopian than what was once a wholesome, beautiful platform, particular for women, teenage girls,
Tumblr?
Yeah, to post really awesome stuff to then be bought by a porn company after being sold by Verizon.
It's
like
so
horrifying.
Sad. It was so easy. It was David Karp. He really was a brilliant thing he created that made it simple for anybody to have a website. I bet you had a Tumblr.
I had a Tumblr.
I thought so. So did I.
Of course.
It was called Tumbleo. And I even had tumbleo.com and I had leo.tumblr.com. And I can't tell you how many people tried to get that name saying, are you going to use that? Are you using it? Can I have it? Do you want it? Do you need it? But I killed it after Verizon bought it. I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
That's another company that just couldn't be allowed to exist and just be a thing. It always had to be achieving something else. And these market pressures are just, I think, strangling a lot of good products that can't compete in this super, weird world we're in right now.
Now, Carsten, yeah. I think, Carsten, you liked Detective Pikachu. You liked the furry Pikachu. Am I right?
I'm actually taking two carloads full of teenage boys to the drive-in to see it next Friday.
Perfect place to see it. Where is a drive-in?
In Concord. In Concord,
the
California.
Last drive-in in
the
America.
Last drive-in in the Bay Area. Actually, I think there's one in the South Bay, too.
How do you
we
feel,
have some in Massachusetts.
How do you be,
there's,
feel
there's
about
a couple near me.
The Sonic the Hedgehog?
I
find him disturbing.
Kill it with fire.
This is a furry Sonic the Hedgehog, and there's considerable upset over the whole thing. That's Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik.
I like that.
The director posted these images, he said, after massive Twitter outrage. There's three words you don't hear together very often. I said sardonically. He said, okay, maybe we will change this. The message is loud and clear. You're not happy with the design and you want changes. It's going to happen. I think rightly so. It's one thing to have a furry Pikachu. Another thing to have a furry... Oh, it's terrifying. Terrifying. Live action Sonic. Is the world ready for it?
Yeah.
And here's a good use for technology. Let's put five Madonnas on stage at the same time. This is augmented reality. I did not see the Billboard Music Awards. I don't know. Maybe some of you did.
Nope.
Somehow they managed to get not one, not two, but five Madonnas on the Las Vegas.
I think I was watching Ice Melt that night.
Stage. I actually like Madonna. Went to see her. We flew to Denver just to see her. But even I don't know if I want five Madonnas on stage. Kind of a weird story. Friday, all Firefox extensions stopped working. Weirdly, Firefox, I guess, forgot to renew their code signing certificate. It expired after 5 p.m. Pacific on Friday night. And everybody using Firefox, right? The extension just stopped working. And it gave you a weird It gave you a weird message, right? What did it say?
Can we ask the 10 people?
Oh, you write extensions. So one of our audience members writes extensions, and you got a lot of support emails. I bet you did. What's going on?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, what'd you do, Dan? What'd you do? Did you break it, huh? Did you break it?
Firefox is big enough to stay on top of that, though, right?
One would think. So they did immediately send out an updated, I guess an updated certificate, I think on Saturday for the desktop, but there are still problems with some of the mobile versions of Firefox. Are you still getting support emails, Dan?
Oh.
He's checking his phone. That's kind of scary. Huh? 9 support emails. Firefox said there do not do any of the workarounds. Do not. Apparently, they will reduce the safety of using Firefox. You should just hang in there, and you'll get an update automatically if your Firefox extensions aren't working. It's kind of a statement.
Someone in the chat room says they got theirs working again, but he had to restore 20,000 files from his backup.
Oh.
That's Rocket88 in the chat room.
Oh, what a mess. That's cray cray. Yeah, you'd think there'd be somebody just keeping an eye on that certificate. Hey, you know, it's going to expire in
a little reminder, calendar reminder.
Put it in the calendar. A little tickler.
A calendar.
You know what happened? They told Jibo, remind me.
Probably.
And, the rest is history.
They're probably using Google Calendar, and then Google just snuck and deleted
it. What time zone is that? Mozambique?
Sorry, Firefox. We don't know.
No, we're not going to fix it. Folks, we are done. I am so thrilled with this panel. You guys are fantastic. Please go to Wired.com and check out Louise Matsakis' pieces, including the one about her son, the little baby phone. That's her most recent piece. Louise, you're great. Thank you for staying till sunset and beyond. Oh, she's muted. Is that us or you?
I think that's you guys. I'm talking. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, you are talking. And now we are hearing. Thank you for being here, Louise. First time. Was it okay?
Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah,
it was great.
Good.
Not so scary.
Not so bad. We'll get you back soon. Thank you also, Aunt Pruitt, for filling in at the last moment. We had Will Harris booked, but he had a problem, a sudden issue in the family. He had to take the day off. But, Aunt, you are a marvelous fella for taking some time out of your busy day to spend with us. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure.
YouTube.com/Aunt Pruitt. That's where the videos live.
Please head on over there and hit the subscribe button because that's how I get work, people. They look at those numbers and that's how I get work.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yep.
So people still care about YouTube.
As usual.
YouTube numbers, huh? Aunt also does a podcast with his wife.
Oh, yeah.
It's a brave
We're
thing
still
to
hanging
do.
On with
You're
that.
You're still doing that?
Yes, sir. The schedule's getting nuts because she's been working some part-time stuff and our son has been working part-time. So we've been crossing paths trying to figure out when we can sit here in the studio and actually turn on the mics and talk about the stuff.
Everyday people, everyday stuff. Sort of.
Right.
Sort of.
That's how you say it.
Yeah, sort of. Thank you, Ann. And Daniel, I really appreciate it. You're probably missing the influencer party right now.
It's just starting soon. It's all right. I got to show up fashionably. Okay. Like, you don't want to look too needy.
Get your Microsoft Kin phone out of the hotel safe and head on over.
Exactly.
Expect posts.
Exactly. You know, thanks for having me. As always,
my pleasure.
It's a great cast. Yeah, I love everybody here.
Executive editor at Windows Central. WindowsCentral.com. Definitely the place to go for your build coverage all this week. Poor Daniel's got to suffer through it. You should too.
Yeah. I didn't tell you. Actually, I'll tell you a quick little funny thing about this. I'm going to throw Microsoft under the bus.
Uh-oh.
Tuesday, they actually have us watching a Google I.O. That's part of like. That's
amazing.
Wait a minute. They're going to make you watch Google I.O.?
They're giving us an option where we
actually,
can go watch it here at Build, which I thought it was
In the new Microsoft, there is a lot of overlap. For instance, I'm sure Microsoft will talk about progressive web apps, as will Google, right?
Yep. Yeah, I expect that, definitely.
I mean, they're competitors in the cloud, but there are definitely areas of overlap. Microsoft's putting Chromium at the center of its browser, Edge.
Yep.
Do you call it Credge, or is just that Paul and Mary Jo?
That's just them. We call it Edgeium. That's the
I like Credge. Credge sounds Edgeium. Like something that gets stuck in a crevice somewhere.
Credge. That sounds terrible.
I know. It's awful.
Like, nah, that's just them. Don't put that on me.
Well, we'll hear more about Credge tomorrow and many other things. We will be doing our live coverage, as we always do, of the streaming coverage from Microsoft, the keynote and stuff. Megan Maroney and I will be here early, bright and early, around 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 Eastern time. That's 1500 UTC. You can watch the stream from Microsoft as we kind of Mystery Science Theater 2000 style sit in front of it and talk and make funny. 3,000. I took 1,000 out. MST 3K. I don't know. I'm old enough. I remember 2K. That was in the early days. So tune in for that. There will be. We will continue with the Microsoft event because Paul and Mary Jo will be doing their analysis for Microsoft immediately after. We'll stream that. And then Windows Weekly tomorrow afternoon, I think 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC, if you want to watch us do that live. The following day, Google I.O., that commences at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time. And Jason Howell will be there. Jeff Jarvis will be there. Who's joining me? Is Flo joining me?
Kevin Toefel will be joining
me. Oh, nice.
You.
About Chromebooks, Kevin Toefel.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we love Kevin. Yeah, he's great. So we'll be doing that, live streaming coverage of that. And then on Twig on Wednesday, Jeff Jarvis is going to come up. So we're going to have continued coverage of Google I.O. with Jeff in studio. So that's a little bit of a programming note. Couple of big notes about triangulation coming up. This Friday, I'm going to be interviewing Trey Ratcliffe, everybody's favorite photographer. I know, Ant, you probably love Trey.
Yes, I love Mr. Ratcliffe.
Great guy. He's got a new book about how influencers ruined Instagram.
Amen.
Cannot wait. He blows the lid off the influencer market in Instagram. It's going to be great. And here's a guy who loved Instagram just as much as he loved Google Plus, and Facebook is a great way to build his reputation, show his photos off, and he is pissed. So yep. Trey Ratcliffe will join us on Friday. A week from Friday, our good friend Daniel Suarez, the author of Freedom and Demon, he has a new book. It's great, called Delta V. It's all about asteroid mining, and he will be our guest on Triangulation a week from Friday. So two really good triangulations coming up. We do those Friday around 11:30 Pacific. That's 2:30 Eastern time, 18:30 UTC. You can watch all of the stuff we're doing live at twit.tv/live, live video and audio streams you can participate in. And if you're doing that, go in the chat room because they're also watching and listening live. That's irc.twit.tv. But, of course, every show we do is really a podcast available for on-demand. You can listen or watch by going to our website, twit.tv. and downloading the latest episode. But the best thing to do, if you ask me, is get your favorite podcast application and subscribe. That way you don't even have to think about it. It'll just appear on your phone the minute it's available. Plenty of time for your Monday morning commute. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thanks to our great studio audience, Andreu and his team visiting from Spain. They're here for Google I.O. It's great to have you. Also visitors from Australia, all over the world. I've got the cards right here. New York City, Sydney, Australia, and Toronto. We had a big crew here. That's great. Thank you. If you want to be in the studio, you can. Email tickets at twit.tv. We'll make sure there's a cheer out for you. Now it's time to go watch Game of Thrones. Or if you're a big shot, go to Microsoft's Influencers Party. I'll see you next time. Another twit is in the can. Bye-bye.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hey, chat room, if y'all are listening, please know that May is the Mental Health Awareness Month. Go check out NAMI.org. That's NAMI.org. And just give a shout out to Mental Health Awareness Month here in May. Thank y'all very much.
You know what? We're going to put that into the show so everybody who's listening will hear that. NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Hashtag why care. I think that's a very good idea.
Let's remove the stigma, folks.
You bet. Somebody whose family member has mental illness, it's a terrible thing, but it shouldn't be stigmatized.